Hello, you're listening to the Taco Spirit AnimeCast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
Today's episode is our part one of our winter 2021 anime season reviews. It's time to dive through quite a bit of the season. We're pretty much going for a two-parter, so this will be pretty much half of what we're going to be going through. And we have today is Wonder Egg Priority, Mushoku Tensei, Jobless Reincarnation, Sales at Work, Code Black, Sales at Work, Second Season, Bottom Tier Character, Tomozaki, Geki Doll, Idoli Pride, Jujutsu Kaisen, Nananbiori Nonstop, Heaven's Design Team, ReZero, Second Season, Part 2, Attack on Titan, the final season, technically Part 1, and The Promised Neverland, Second Season. So yes, it seems like there's a lot here, but technically quite a bit of those are, you know, second seasons and whatever, so it won't be like insane amounts of going through because, you know, most people know what's going on with those. So it's less to explain, I guess. But excited?
Yes.
Awesome. And now, unfortunately, with one of these, it's not technically the end. So I'm not going to get too in depth with my review of it. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, as usual, we're at TakuSpirit.com. It's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old. Great community forum links at the top. Social media links on the right side. And then we also have our link to our YouTube channel, where a lot of these things will get video reviews as well. Sometimes I will forget things that I talked about in the video or here, so you can get some extra stuff there, technically. and, you know, some like Sales at Work I might eventually get back to and be able to do a review, which I'm not going to do this time because Chris finished it, but I did not. So, yeah. Are you ready?
I believe so. We'll see.
Awesome. Let's dive right into it. Our first one is Wonder Egg Priority. And like I mentioned before, technically this is not finished yet. We are getting a 13th episode on June 29th, which is like literally between summer or spring and summer, I believe. So unfortunate, but it is what it is. I just want to get my, you know, basically it's almost done, but I do want to chime on it. So I am going to talk about it here. But again, it's Wonder Egg Priority. It was streamed on Funimation. Ran for 12 episodes in the winter season, and like I said, it will have a 13th episode on June 29th to finalize it, and it's being done by Studio Cloverworks. It's an original. Genres are psychological, drama, fantasy. Creator is the screenwriter Shinji Nojima, who has worked on mostly dramas and live-action movies, and the director was Shin Wakabayashi, who directed Diaries of Our Days, which is a 22/7 short, as well as some episodes of Aqua 13, Attack on Titan episodes, and Working. So good stuff there. But yeah, this basically follows Ioto, and Ioto ends up, she's a shut-in. She was bullied when she was in school, and unfortunately a friend of hers that kind of, you know, extended a friendship hand to her that, you know, recently transferred to school, was bullied to the point of committing suicide. And so Ioto has pretty much shut herself away from society, basically just stays at home most of the time, goes out at night. And then she stumbles upon a weird garden that has two people, Aka and Uraka, and they are giving away these eggs. And then in a dream state, whoever has these eggs can crack them open, and a girl will emerge from them. And these are all girls that essentially have ended their life, unfortunately. And they have to protect them from these nasty bullies that are basically the catalyst to why they ended their own lives. And if they save them, they can essentially, I guess, pass on. They'll disappear. So, and she's doing this. Aya is doing this because she was told that if she keeps releasing these eggs, protecting the girl that comes from them, she will eventually save her friend's life, who, you know, ended her life. And so she keeps going in this dream state, releasing eggs, fighting the bad guys, all to help her friend. And she's later joined by some other girls, Neru, who seems to be a head of a company, a really big company. Rika, who is a past pop idol. Momoe, who is a girl that essentially is always mistaken for a boy. So she has a little bit of issues and insecurities about her femininity. And yeah, they all go into the stream state and fight baddies and protect eggs and hopefully help the one that they want to, you know, basically save. But yeah. This is literally probably the best show I've watched in a long time. unless they completely... And there's a joke there that technically there's issues with the ending already because we thought it was over, but it wasn't. Unfortunately, there was a eighth episode that was a recap that they title as the eighth episode, but we ended up finding out that it was just production issues and that it was actually supposed to only be 12 episodes, but now the finale is the 13th episode, and then we have to wait for it. But like I said, I wanted to get into this episode to review because I don't want to forget it in our podcast lineup. I'm not sure if we'll have time to fit it in to a podcast later, but I love this series. I love it to death. It is, like I said, unless they completely mess up that 13th episode, it is pretty much a perfect show, and I love it to death. It's probably going to end up in my top five anime of all time. There's just everything about this show is perfect. It's gorgeous. The character designs are fantastic. The storytelling's just heart-wrenching. Essentially, it's putting a huge spotlight on, you know, an issue that everybody should be aware of, which is essentially suicide. And the girls, they're very short stories, these eggs that they crack and they hear these stories, and the stories of the girls that they're trying to save are always essentially the same issue. And getting into their stories, they're very short, very simple, but they're kind of always spotlighting a certain issue, like a girl that has run away, not having, you know, safety there, an instructor that forced themselves upon somebody at school or whatever. Those kind of issues are very short, very simple, very heartbreaking. And then at the same time, couple that in with the struggle these girls are having, their own personal struggles that are, you know, highlighted on the side, getting into Rika and her, you know, wanting to see her father, Momoe and her insecurities, Neru and kind of her lack of emotion and trying to discover emotion, all at the same time, slowly unraveling these kind of side stories in the girls that they're trying to save. And it's all done with, like I said, incredible animation, incredible directing, just all the different shots and angles, the artistry that they're putting into the show is phenomenal. Just amazing action pieces, amazing animation pieces, which obviously was the reason that we led to having a little bit of a delay and probably the delay for the 13th episode, which, like I said, I hope that it all ends up turning out in the end. But, yeah, and there was this certain part in the show, too, like way late in it, when they start really getting into a lot of what's happening. Some of those episodes, especially some of the backstory episodes, were absolutely unsettling and just perfectly directed. It's been a long time since I've watched a psychological horror type show that really was that unsettling. And I loved it. I loved it to death. It was just so perfectly done that I cannot. That it's like this one episode is just so like perfect. This like one episode can encompass an entire like genre and an entire top list, I guess. But yeah, it was one of those episodes when I seen it, I'm like, Chris will hate this, but I'm wondering if he'll love it just because of how perfect it was done. Like how amazing this was told. So yeah, I love this series to death. I cannot express enough that I think it is probably one of the best animes I've ever watched, and I cannot wait for that final episode, and I, again, hope it doesn't ruin the entire thing. But yeah. Chris, I think I texted you at some point. I'm like, you really need to watch this. I know you're not going to like it, but I know you're going to love it.
Yeah, I still have intentions on watching it.
Awesome. Well, try to watch it before the 29th, and then we can do like a full-on episode of it. Or if you can watch it by next week, you can give your thoughts on it. But it is unfortunate because you technically can't give a full idea of the entire story because we still haven't technically seen that last episode. So, yeah, it's phenomenal.
I got a special stay of execution.
I think the moment that I told you that it wasn't the ending and that 13th episode was delayed, you're like, yes, I don't have to watch it. Hopefully Andrew will forget, and then by the time it actually comes out, he'll forget, and then I don't have to watch it, and I don't have to review it.
Don't know that I'm thinking that, but we'll go with it.
So good, though. So good. Oh, I love it, and I'm going to miss it. Like, every week, whenever we usually try to shoot for Tuesday record days, And every week it's pretty much been me like antsy going, Chris, finish this. Okay, it's wept. It's Wonder Egg Priority Day. It's Wonder Egg Priority. I have to get off of here so I can watch it. And plus, we had a lot of support on our YouTube channel from it. It was definitely one of the biggest hits, and I think that's because a lot of people were looking for, you know, people to talk about it. It was stirring a lot of conversation. So, and that's something that I always love in this show is being able to spark that conversation. So, yeah, really, really good stuff. Really good. Go watch it. It's amazing. So, yeah, Wonder Egg Priority. That is that. Mushoku Tensei. Did we say it was not Tensei, it's Tensei, right? Tensei. Mushoku Tensei. But I'll still say Tensei every time because I'm so used to saying Tensei. Jobless Reincarnation or Mushoku Tensei. Isekai Itara Honki Desu. Dasu. And this one is streaming on Funimation, run for 11 episodes. Done by Studio Bind, which is a new company and a joint venture between White Fox and Egg Firm. The source is a light novel. The genres are drama, fantasy, and magic. And this one follows a guy who is a shut-in as well. he was kind of dealt with a lot of bullying when he was in school. And at some point, he kind of shut himself up, spends all day watching, essentially, hentai. And at some point, the person, I guess, that was funding his ability to stay, you know, held up in his room, passed away. So a bunch of people came in and just basically kicked him out on the street. You know, just he's a deadbeat. No reason for him to be there. And as he's kind of walking the streets, he ends up seeing a bunch of students that are on the side of the road. And he, fearing they're going to hit by a truck, runs out there to help them and gets hit himself. And as he's kind of fading away and dying, he's hearing the voice of somebody else, and when he kind of reopens his eyes, he finds himself in the arms of a woman named Zenith. And he is now the child of Zenith and Paul, which are, you know, past adventurers in a fantasy world. And this guy, now named Rudy, kind of basically grows up from a infant all the way into being, you know, I think he was like 8 or so, and then a little bit later in the actual story that we got in 11 episodes. But as he's kind of grown up in this world, he still kind of retains his desire to, you know, stay at home and not go out. He still has his fears of, you know, the trauma that he went through in the previous life. But he discovers there's magic in this world and starts training in magic and eventually becomes the apprentice to a magician named Roxy. And Roxy trains him, and then eventually he goes out into the world. Goes to train a somebody within the same family that his father is a part of, which is the Grey Rat family, and trains a girl named Eris, and then things get crazy later on. But yeah, your thoughts on Mushoku Tensei, Jobless Reincarnation.
Now, having Wonder Egg Priority off to the side as a possibility of that, this is easily one of my favorites of the season. I absolutely love it. I was absolutely chiming off the walls at Andrew the entire first few weeks while Andrew was trying to catch up on things. I jumped in ahead of time and I was freaking out about this. I loved it so much. From how it looks to how it feels, the storytelling, excellent pacing, just even when me and Andrew were talking about it in previous podcasts about how just so much is done episode to episode. You feel like you've gotten so much out of each episode as far as content. It's just well done. Excellent artwork, excellent designs, vast world to explore. I can't chime enough. If you have not looked at this, you seriously should.
Yeah, the one of the big things that I kind of hit on is it's insane that this was only 11 episodes, and it felt like we covered so much stuff, and it never felt rushed. And it's like this weird, insane balance that in the writing, the original writing, and then the pacing and the directing they did for the actual adaptation. It's like, this is one of those cases where you know that the director and everybody was super passionate about this. And there's a lot of stories kind of floating around. I haven't really found many confirmations, but I do know the director that was working on it, or the producers, were like, yeah, they want to adapt this whole thing, which technically, again, here's the grain of salt. Every director says that. Every director expresses that they want to continue to do something to its fullest, but it was one of those things that when they first looked at it, they knew, and you can feel it in the show. You could feel that the creators of this adaptation are very much so in love with this story. And it's just the tender care that they put in everything, and the level of detail in everything. It sucks because there's this two-sided coin where we want everything to look gorgeous. We want every anime to look gorgeous. Adaptations should always look gorgeous because it's taking somebody else's creative work and breathing life into it, making it move. And so obviously we all want these studios to do fantastic jobs. Unfortunately, not every studio has the budget, time, or, you know, skill to do the kind of, you know, work that we want to have it done into it. But the thing that it is always kind of has to be kept in mind is it's not always just, you know, things looking incredible, action scenes looking incredible. It's the level of detail in making things move very lifelike that adds a level of, you know, life to it. When you see a character's hair flow in the wind, it makes it more immersive because you feel like that's a living, breathing world. And what they did with this show is just that. They made it look like a living, breathing world that you were just sucked into. Seeing the blades of grass, the characters running around, the hair flowing in the wind, all that stuff made this believable, made this come to life. And that is something that is very, it's not often seen in a lot of shows. And so, yeah, right off the bat, animation, visuals, character designs, the directing for the actual shots, just perfect.
You sure that that's not just the animators flexing on you?
That too. Hey, look, we're Studio Bind. Come over here. But yeah, that on top of the fact that knowing that there's going to be more is incredibly exciting because for sure, when it was first starting out and we immediately fell in love with it, the big fear that came was, is this going to be basically a source material bait? Is this a, you know, incredible, you know, insane promotion for the light novel? And knowing that they're going to have more is definitely has me excited and allowed me to kind of invest more into it because I knew, thankfully, we will get a lot more of this. And I'm already kind of seeing it, especially with the story they've told already. This is seemingly going to tell this guy's entire life. And we already got a glimpse from basically infancy all the way until, I think, upwards of, 12 or so. And that's also really cool because it's not just giving a confined story of, oh, here's the teenage years. Obviously, every single anime has to kind of cover the teenage years for some reason. But knowing that we're probably going to get more further into his life is just really incredible. And the story that it's kind of told already, I already kind of mentioned the idea that this is technically, it feels like it's getting so much information in such a short period of time, 11 episodes to essentially go through so much of his life already. But like I said, the way that it's telling it is so good because it doesn't feel rushed, but we're getting so much information. So much of his build is happening. And I think the one thing that's really off-putting, and unfortunately it's one of those things of like, a non-anime fan, it's really hard to sell to because he is a perv. And it's obvious it's showing him in his previous life being a shut-in, watching nothing but hentai porn. And so he has this pervy nature about him, even in this other life. He thinks about these girls. He, you know, tries to advance on some of the girls. He's super pervy. And it's always in his head as well. But the thing that I appreciate, and I don't think it's ever going to fully get away from it, but I do appreciate the fact that it does seem like it's pushing this character with growth. And I mentioned before that I believe that Rudy Grayrat could end up being one of those greatest main characters of anime of all time. Well, technically in the light novel as well, but specifically, we're talking anime here. This could turn into one of those main characters that is one that goes down in history because he is seeing so much growth already. You're seeing him, yeah, break out from that fear of going outside. You're seeing him mature as an adult. You're seeing him run into mistakes that he believes that he can do. Yeah, sometimes manipulating others because of his adult mind, but also, you know, shedding off that essentially lack of growth that he's had because he's been shut in all the time. Seeing him mature as an adult before our eyes is going to be incredible, and I've already seen quite a bit of it, and it's incredible. I love it. The assumptions that he makes that could possibly cost the lives of others, all that stuff is something that I'm looking forward to seeing more in the future, and that's already seen so much of it already. Other than that, yeah, a lot of it really incredible characters. Roxy, like I said, it is pretty much was like best girl of the season, and we didn't really see much of her. She's just absolutely adorable. I love her character design. And I miss her immensely already in the show. Unfortunately, didn't get to see much of her. Eris was a fantastic tsundere. She is technically one of those, here is an archetype. All right, we're totally going full on tsundere character, aren't we? But then she has all this, you know, other aspects about her that are just incredible. I love her very innocent nature, but yet very much so violent. The way that she responds to certain situations, I'm really curious if they will expand on more. I think I mentioned before, like, her kind of very passive attitude whenever something really incredibly violent happens. I'm really curious if they'll get into more of that. Why does she respond the way she does? They're obviously pointing it out for a certain reason. Yeah, Geese Slaying was amazing as well. Unfortunately, again, didn't get to see much of her. What are the names of them? The Superds? Was it Superds or was it Superd? It's Superds. The Superds,
that sounds right.
The possible double-crossing that happened in the past story, all that stuff was really expanding the world they were getting into in the later parts. Just amount of world-building they were doing in the later parts, again, has me really excited for the future. But I was eating all that stuff up. There's just so much to unpack with this series and I am absolutely in love with it. Yeah, we did kind of have the debate already a couple times. We're kind of questioning it. I kind of want another core of it, but I am already seeing this pretty much dethroning every isekai off my list. We're still struggling with Ascendant of a Bookworm. That show is absolutely incredible, but I'm already seeing this possibly dethroning that as well. And it is turning out to be easily the best isekai ever, and it is a huge step above anything else. It is one of those things, I hate saying that because it's people go immediately, oh, it is an isekai, I don't want to touch it. But it's like, but if you're ever going to watch an isekai, this is the one. If you've given up on isekais, you still have to watch this. It's not an isekai. It is not a sum of isekai. It is so much more, and it is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, the biggest problem that I have is because you're balancing the action-ish type feel of this show compared to the more meandering pace of Ascendance of the Bookworm. The pacing is very different between the two of them. And Ascendance of the Bookworm, its pacing fits for what it's doing, and the pacing for this show fits for what it's doing. And so it's really hard to kind of go, which one of these do I like better? Because they both have their own charm for what they're doing. And it's really not fair, honestly, to go, these two isekais, which one's better? Well, each one of them are phenomenal in their own way, doing what they do best.
Yeah, it's just like putting up Ascendance of Bookworm, which is more slice of life with a fantasy twist, versus Mushoku Tensei, which is more, you know, fantasy action and a lot of comedy, versus something like, let's say, what was the reincarnated into her dating sim game, the villainous show.
Yeah, all paths lead to doom or something.
Yeah, that one, they're like completely different shows. It would be like putting up Kaguya-sama Love is War versus, you know, a violent action show, Wonder Egg Priority or something. They're just two different genres, but they're both doing technically the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you, because we go on and on about, or I go on and on about slime, and slime is even would have a hard time going against these two, because they're, that one even is doing something very different than these two. And now we have spider, which is doing something vastly different than all three of them. It's really difficult to put any of these in, or the, Demon Lord that we had a few seasons ago, that one's very different.
Right.
We keep going on about chairs or about couches. This is the reason why.
right. But yeah, definitely suggest it. Absolutely incredible show. And I cannot wait for more. It is definitely it's a must watch. And I gotta stop because it's incredible. Yeah, and the comedy is definitely right on spot too. And that's definitely something that I should point out is, again, it's very hard with a show that does have technically heavy beats in it, technically does have a world, expansive world, adventure, all this kind of other stuff, to really balance in comedy, which is not, it is not a full-on comedy show. It is sprinkled throughout it. But the thing is having that sprinkle of comedy, you kind of have to pull it off at the right timing. And they just do. Every time the comedy beats come in, it's never jarring. It always fits right into the scene. It feels very natural. And yeah, technically, especially early on, a lot of that comedy is very centered around his pervy nature. Again, that's him coming into this world, having that same, you know, mindset as before and, you know, slowly growing out of it, but I don't think he'll ever probably grow out of it fully, but it is comedy that's always spot on. Yeah. Technically keeping a pair of Roxy's underwear when she leaves as like this, as a shrine is excellent. All this stuff that he, you know, messed around with Eris herself is fantastic. The letter that Paul wrote Rudy when Ghislaine took her or took him, all that kind of stuff is just so spot on. So, yeah, it's incredible. I gotta stop.
It'll be interesting to see how they, as they grow up, if that how that shifts as far as his personality and how the girls will react to him at that point. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I know somebody's perfectly fine with everything. Somebody's perfectly fine with everything. Won that battle. Yeah. Mushoku Tensei, Jobless Reincarnation, definitely a must watch, and I cannot wait for, I believe they were saying summer, so gotta have a little bit of a gap there, which I'm perfectly fine with the gap. Let them get a little bit of rest, build up another fantastic season going forward with all that incredible animation. So yeah, next one we have is technically two. I don't know if you want to bundle them together or if you want to do them separate.
I kind of will. I'm going to end up talking about both of them at the same time. I will designate them as I do the reviews. So let's go ahead and say both of them at the same time.
Okay. So yeah, in this season, of course, we had two seasons of Cells at Work. We had Cells at Work second season, which again is the adaptation of the manga, the original source material of Cells at Work, the manga, ran for 8 episodes done by David Productions. Again, they technically did the first season as well, which we reviewed as well, if you guys want to check that out. It essentially kind of follows the cells within your body personified as people, and they all do their jobs working like the human body does, which, as we all know, is a very complex a piece of equipment that has a lot of moving parts within it. And yeah, so you watch basically follow mostly the red cell, white cells, and a lot of the kind of different happenings that, you know, happen to the body and how each cell kind of responds to it in, again, personified human forms. And then Code Black we had this season as well, which was done by Leiden Films, and it is based off of a manga, Hataraku Saibo Black, which is a spin-off manga, essentially taking the same concept, same personifications of different cells, but doing it in a body that is not at all being taken care of and severely destroyed by the person that owns the body. So whereas technically Cells at Work was more focused on a body with different happenings like allergies and accidents, this one is more, here's a guy that's drinking every night, not getting sleep, smoking. What does the body do? So, yeah. I did not finish them. Like I said, I might go back to finish them, but I was a little bit less interested in going back and watching Code Black because it was just too, it wasn't fun. It wasn't entertaining, and it was just mostly depressing.
Yeah, and that's in a nutshell the biggest beef that I have with Code. I do like the concept of seeing things from the perspective of, and the best way I put it is when we were kind of bantering back and forth and this show happened to come up. It's effectively a body that's desperate to stay alive versus a body who is just reacting to things. So, you get a cut on the arm, your body's not desperately fighting to keep you alive per se. It, of course, naturally your body's always doing it. If it doesn't, you will die, but the body reacts differently. And it is interesting to see a lot of these things from that perspective. So it is interesting to see things from that perspective of the body trying to keep itself going. So in some respects, I do love that when it comes to Code Black. At the same time, it also causes the cells to have this more grim outlook on things. Where yes, there is the main character who's, he's not really, later on he does kind of get downcast, and so he does end up kind of falling in line with a lot of other cells who are, that a lot of them are just plain giving up. And one of the more starker contrasts is to look at the difference between the platelets in one show and the platelets in this show, where you've got these grim little platelets that are just absolutely like, get out my way. I ain't even fooling with you. And whereas in the other Cells at Work, the original, they're happy-go-lucky, cutesy, going across the way and asking people to excuse them while they walk by. And everybody just stops and goes, oh, how adorable, the platelets. And so that's the difference between the two shows. If anything, you can't get more starker contrast between those two characters. That translates across the entire show. Sometimes they're talking about how does the cells act when they're trying to work to save hair follicles or something like that, or even darker when they actually talk about pus, which is really gross to think about, but this is a normal thing that happens in the body, and they actually discuss this in Code Black, and it is brutal. So you get a lot of things where it's just absolutely stark as far as just how bleak things are in the Code Black version. Like I said, it's interesting to see things from that perspective, but at the same time, it is brutal, and it does kind of wear at you going from episode to episode. And it was like, I don't want to keep going. I really don't. But I did push through it, and eventually seemed like we were going to get to a kind of happy ending, and it didn't quite end up as happy as I was hoping. So, it's frustrating. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, as for the original series, absolutely fantastic. I did get a kick out of it and had to message poor Andrew. I guess I was trying not to spoil it, but it ended up, I guess I spoiled something. Ended up bumping into a kind of a Saber type character and kind of poked at Andrew that he may want to go and watch it so he could see the Saber character. She was absolutely phenomenal. And that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. it is funny though, cause when Chris talks about like dark shows and how he doesn't like them, this is technically my side of the story. Like, we always discuss the idea of, like, it actually was something that was brought up in our last discussion, because somebody was asking, like, you know, why Chris doesn't like dark shows. And it brought up the conversation of, like, what really is the reason why you can't watch them. And my whole thing was, like, I understand it from a different viewpoint, because whereas, yeah, I watch something like Wonder Egg Priority that technically does get really dark, and is something that is just not, it's weird that we will watch something that we knowingly are seeing something really bad happen to a character, and it's very depressing, and it's very hard to see. You don't want to see a kid get kicked down some stairs. It's not appealing. It is not fun. But it's what that is telling. The story that is telling is what keeps me going. It is the thing that entertains me. It's like, I want to see what happened here. I'm fine with a writer that is saying, this is what happens. This is life. This is what happened. But unfortunately, it's like, this is my version of something that is depressing that doesn't work for me, because I wasn't seeing value in what was happening. Even though, yeah, technically there is aspects in there. There is the struggle of living. There is the hope that, you know, the Red Cell wants to keep, even though every 2 seconds somebody says, no, that's not how it's going to end. You know that. It's not always for this. It is not always this. You thinking this is going to be a good thing is not really necessarily a surefire thing. It is just kind of that element of being stuck in that darkness. And even though you do see light, it wasn't giving light was an aspect that was really kind of wearing me down. And I wasn't seeing hope there. Obviously so. This is obviously not supposed to be a hopeful world in Code Black. So expecting that somebody's going to be happy in the end shouldn't be a thing, because the guy's killing himself, basically. He's killing his body. And that's not working for the souls. It is also kind of funny, because where I talk about the idea of technically... these are cells, and so whenever they do kind of get a little bit overly goofy, you're kind of like, but a cell wouldn't do that, because you're overthinking it. The idea of a cell giving up is kind of like, wait, but that the cell can't give up. It's literally all it does. It's what it was made for. how does it decide what it does? But yeah, it was, I definitely do agree with you. There's a lot to be had with Code Black, and I think it is a nice accent to the original work, because the way that Cells at Work works is telling a story based on the happenings inside of a body, which again necessarily is a reaction with the original series, which is technically with Code Black as well, but Code Black is reacting to completely different things. It is reacting to things in a different way, because of you're essentially working with, it's almost like they're both isekais, but the world that you're being isekai'd into is completely different. So with this one, they're being isekai'd into a world that is, again, not killing itself, versus another isekai world, which is, again, the same type of world, but with different elements being added into it, a different environment.
And it is important to understand, and like you were saying, Code Black provides a contrast so that you can see the difference between the two bodies, and it's very crucial to understand the differences. And I didn't appreciate what I was seeing in Cells at Work until I watched Code Black. So in a way, and plus the fact that nothing's really off limits in Code Black. It was willing to go into the stuff that you really don't want to talk about, like what happens in the liver, what happens in the kidneys, stuff like that, where it's kind of
what happens in the groin.
Yeah, what happens in the groin, which I was just leaving that one out and out there. But the liver, it takes alcohol out of the system. Well, how does the blood remove the toxins from alcohol? Well, we end up with kind of a nightclub type situation. It was really
how do you
kind
remove
of a
the blood
cool
out
idea.
Of the alcohol.
Or how do you get the alcohol? Out of the blood? What are you talking about?
You're crazy. Backwards. You remove the alcohol from the blood cells.
So it was kind of fun to see that. How does caffeine react in the body? Does the body get addicted to caffeine and stuff like that? Or what does smoking do to the body? It goes into all that stuff where Cells at Work didn't really do a lot of that stuff. So like I said, it is interesting to see things from that perspective because none of that stuff is off limits in this show. And I liked having that contrast of something that, while yes, it's bleak and frustrating to watch week to week, it was still kind of neat to see a lot of that stuff. So I wish it was balanced better, like more Cells at Work version of it so that I could see some of this stuff, but not always so depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That's Cells at Work second season and Cells at Work Code Black. Check those out if that sounds interesting to you. I definitely do suggest those that watch, you know, Cells at Work and enjoy it. You definitely should be watching Code Black just to see, again, like you said, that different perspective. And you're probably going to like it. You're probably not going to have my same unless you're just not looking for depressing shows at the time. You might want to steer clear of it because it's just going to make you more depressed. But yeah. Definitely check those out. Next one we have is bottom tier character Tomozaki or Jaku Chara Tomozaki-kun. This one is streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Project Number 9. The source is a light novel. The genres are drama, romance, school. The director was Shinsuke Yanagi, who did Angel 3P and Netoyome. And the series composition was done by Fumihiko Shimo, who did Air TV, Clannad, Golden Time, Kokoro Connect, and New Game. And this one follows a guy named Fumiya Tomozaki, and he is kind of an outcast in school. He kind of just stays away from everybody, doesn't like to socialize with people. Whenever he goes home, he plays a game called Attack Families, or TacFam as they call it, and it's essentially Smash Bros., and he's really, really good at it. And the whole situation with him is that he feels that video games are better than the real world. He kind of quantifies life as kind of a game, and in his mindset, the game of life is terrible and he doesn't like it. Whereas his video games, there's rules, you can build yourself up, you can get better. He feels the game of life is terrible because you can always fail. And some people are given low-tier characters, and some people are given high-tier characters, and it's just, he doesn't like the game of life. He thinks it's terrible and a waste of time. Well, at some point, he is contacted by somebody that is right under him in the rankings in TacFam, and that person wants to meet in the real world, and so he decides, yeah, sure. I mean, you technically, this is his rival, somebody that's always kind of getting better and striving to beat him in the rankings, but never does, so he decides to meet up with this person. And when he meets at a location, as anime would have it, it is one of the most popular girls in school. Aoi Hinami, and Hinami is not too happy with what she meets because she's always kind of looked up to this person in the rankings in TacFam, and come to find out this person she looked up to is essentially in her eyes a deadbeat, somebody that has given up on life. His appearance isn't good, he's dressed really shabby, and yeah, this kind of upset her, and she kind of very so much puts him down. And he kind of responds like, you know, how can you talk down to me? You're given a high tier character. You don't know what I'm going through. Life is, you know, terrible, all that kind of stuff. And so she decides, okay, well, come back to my place. So they go back to her place where she basically, you know, takes off all her makeup and everything, dresses herself down to, you know, normally when she goes out, of course, she kind of dresses herself up, makeup and everything. And he like hardly recognizes her. Without all her makeup and her hair done and everything like that. And this gets into a conversation about, like, she believes that the game of life is just as fun as the TacFam game that they both really love. And that it's challenging and there's little aspects to it that are actually fun. And because she kind of acknowledged TacFam as something that is equally as fun as the game of life, this leads to him to allowing her to essentially help him level up in the game of life. So she, from this point on, will give him tasks that says, you know, go talk to this person 5 times in a week, smile under a mask for a while, clean your posture, all these kind of things that he has to do in order to kind of, you know, benefit his social standings, help him communicate better, and level up again in the game of life. And so this kind of precedes him, you know, meeting other people. Nanami, who is kind of the more track sports kind of girl, very kind of Genki and cheery character. Fuka, who is this girl that's in the library who really likes books. Yuzu, who is this girl that really likes this popular guy. Shuji, who is the popular guy who really wants to beat Fumiya in Tac Fam really badly. All these different characters that he's meeting over time as he's, again, leveling up in the game of life. And all the challenges that Hinami gives him and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, your thoughts on bottom tier character Tomozaki, which I hope you finished.
I did.
Okay.
I
was going to yell at you otherwise.
I thought it was, I actually beat it before you, so ha.
You probably Flex. Finished a lot of before me because, again, I'm having to do videos and stuff.
I'm teasing. Stop. It's, I thought it was absolutely
phenomenal. And you didn't finish Wonder Egg Priority either, so.
No, this is true. I've pretty much sucked with catching up on shows this week, so you're doing wonderful.
We're like this little jab session in the middle of a review podcast. And you're going to suck next week too, aren't you?
I actually thought this show was absolutely phenomenal. I still to this day stand by what I said before. I love the way that it's kind of breaking down social interactions and kind of making them more gamified. And while no, it's not perfect, it is. I do like that it's trying to communicate to people who have a hard time with social interactions and trying to break a lot of that stuff down to where it makes more sense. Social interactions is very complicated, and having something that just kind of makes a little bit more sense can help some people, and seeing that, I think, is really a neat thing to do. Just as much as just go and talk. Whether they accept you or not is not always the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to break down those barriers that keeps us from actually interacting. And the rejection is the walls. Those things can be overcame, and sometimes it will end up going badly, but other times it can actually work for you. And that's one of the things that this show does. And it while it's even Fumiya, he has those awkward interactions where he's trying to do something that he's not used to, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Talk about
work.
Working out his butt.
Yeah, I think so. So there was a couple of them that was like, oh yeah, that one sucked.
And then Hinami has to run in there and go, oh yeah, I'm not gonna do that too, to save his butt, literally and figuratively. No, I'm kind of on the same base as you.
I was thinking of the awkward hot springs situation where it was like,
oh gosh,
yeah,
I can't believe that worked out.
Yes.
Yeah. that's one of those ones where that could go in very different directions. Surprised he did not end up dead. But no, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. This definitely did, especially early on, I think, kind of bring up the conversation of, yeah, like you said, breaking out from your shell, socializing with others, not allowing yourself to kind of stay in an isolation point that is never really healthy. And it was part of my discussion that I ended up having with a video talking about, you know, self-isolation and breaking out in making that communication jump that you need to do. And it is honestly one of those ones where I think it definitely started out with that feel. And it was very so much you had to suspend your disbelief a little bit because a lot of the stuff is kind of like a little bit too easy. It doesn't always turn out that way, especially in the real world. Often cases, a lot of people are very, very much so not into somebody stepping out of their norm and trying to communicate with them. School's a really nasty place sometimes, most of the time. But it was giving a message of hope. It was giving this idea of, yes, you can step out there and try. And there's people out there that you might think are unapproachable. I think, like, especially with, say, the case with Nanami. Nanami, you know, is very popular. You would think that she'd be unapproachable. And yet, she is a goofball that does... she's done this in the past. She has reached out to pull somebody out from the dark. And it's something that, at face value, Fumiya did not know. And I think if he did know that she essentially brought somebody else out from that same darkness he was in, he would probably, you know, not be as hesitant to jump out there and say, hey, how's it going? Because she is approachable. She does have this other side. She is not the popular girl that's like, ew, what are you doing? And I think there is something to be said about people not being what you think they are and being that they are approachable. And it definitely was hitting on that feeling early on. Again, I don't think it's one of those things where it's always going to be that way. And yeah, you can make the argument that it's too easy, but it was giving that sense of hope. And I do think that's a really positive thing, even though, like I said, we're going on basic levels of communication here that you wonder why he doesn't know, based on the fact that he does have relatives. He does live in a family. They do communicate, that he should know basics of communication. But it never was dragged down by that. It was never really kind of staying in that kind of feeling, because it did kind of move on from there to really exploring the characters, their struggles, while at times not feeling too overly complicated. We're not getting into clannad levels of mind-bending drama here. They are very basic stories, but they're important to the characters, and I did like that. Like, again, hitting back on her again, but Nanami technically did get a very huge story arc, whereas not a lot of the characters did get full story arcs, which does want me to have more of this series. But it was a very basic story, but it was important to her, and the way that she portrayed what her struggle was, I thought was absolutely fantastic. I loved the second place questionnaire that she gave that I think hit home and was very simple, but yet very compelling. So, but no, I think the thing that really did surprise me was that, and I started feeling it at some point, and I remember texting Chris about it, and I'm like, I think I know where this is going, and I'm kind of intrigued. Like, at face value, this seems like a goofy comedy. It does have a little bit of tinge of that harem feel, but it never really is. It's not a harem. It has this feeling of character exploration. It is very so much about the characters. But at some point, I was thinking to myself, wait, is this going for? And again, I'm using this analogy as a way of kind of not really spoiling things. But I posed to Chris as, is this a case of don't just read the strategy guide? And it kind of went that direction. And I really did like how they kind of went full circle with the ending of the adaptation, where they brought the characters back to an origin point and really had them question what they were doing. And I loved that, because I was having that feeling of, you know, essentially a lot of this has to do with masks that people put on. Several characters in the show really do kind of have this feeling of change they want to seek out. And a lot of it has to do with the mask that they put in front of them. Nobody is what they actually are. We have that, you know, whenever you interact with somebody, you always, like, you know, somebody new, you walk up and you're like, hey, how's it going? You never see the side of them that's hurting. They never immediately have, well, in most cases, they don't immediately show all of their scars to you. And it's breaking down those barriers and seeing those scars and people showing those scars and what essentially they portray, their facade, versus what they actually are, and how you kind of connect that all with what you were mentioning earlier with the gamification of social interactions. I was like, I immediately in my video, the thing that I open up with is, this is a show that literally exceeded my expectations. I was not expecting it to get this, not, I don't want to say heavy, but this complex, like taking this in a direction that is actually meaningful. This could have been a simple comedy, slight drama, goofball show about a guy gamifying life, to a show that's really hitting on the mask that we put in front of ourselves and how it affects people around us and how it affects yourself, really is the important thing. And it's like, I don't think this is a light novel bait. It definitely technically could be. Because it feels so chapter close, I don't feel mad that I need more. But I love what the direction they could take it from here. And it does technically have me excited for a possible future adaptation or the light novel itself. Unfortunately, I don't have like this like clawing desire like I do with like Mushoku Tensei, where I think I would love to jump into like the source material. But more so on the idea that I hope that they do adapt more of this, because I did really enjoy where they were going with it.
I absolutely agree. I thought that the quote unquote twist that Andrew was kind of mentioning that happened towards the end, where not necessarily a twist, just more like the tables got turned on a couple of characters. And I thought that was actually really fantastically done. I really, really would love to see where it goes from that point on. There was a couple of like hints that, one of the characters did, that, hey, you can follow this route. There's actually another, love interest in your route. And it was like, I know who you're talking about. And then it was like, it started to get cloudy as to who it actually was that character was talking about, where I thought I knew who it was, that character was talking about, but maybe not. So it's really interesting to see where the social interactions were going in a lot of cases. One of the things that Andrew had kind of brought up that I don't know if he was actually mentioning, but that I really did like was, one of the things that's really interesting about this, when I say, Andrew mentioning, talking to Nanami as far as a character who's more open to, other people. One of the cool things that you can drag out of this show, was that even if like Shuji, Nakamura, who's he's an absolute jerk. If you were the quote-unquote geek character or otaku that doesn't interact real well with other people, and you keep trying to interact with people like Shuji, Nakamura, you would probably have a hard time talking to people. Whereas if you were to interact with somebody like Nanami or go out and find that person like Nanami, you would be able to find yourself being able to get into the social circles. Did you ever try to go and find your version of Fuka, who is actually that character that you probably wouldn't notice, but in actuality has been watching you the whole time? There's a lot of things that this show is trying to tell us. Don't go into the dark. Find your place, even if it's not the person that you think it was. Maybe it's this other person. Maybe it's that other person that's over there. Don't just automatically give up. That's what this show is talking about.
Shuji's not a jerk. Shuji's not a jerk. He's just he got placed in that position.
Yeah,
he's actually a geek. But again, I think that's what they're going with pretty much all of them. And it's funny because I think that the characters that are seemingly the most approachable, I think, are the ones that have the biggest masks that are technically the ones that you have to watch out for. It's like a side effect of the whole situation. Technically, the ones that are the most approachable technically are the ones that have the biggest mask on that you have to be watching out for the most, because they're not giving their full self, which is, again, a more stranger twist to it. So, Yeah.
He was secretly a gamer, and he just had a hard time with expressing.
He just wanted people to leave him alone.
I was telling Andrew.
He literally just wanted people to leave him alone.
I was telling Andrew, I was half expecting everybody to reveal that they were gamers the entire time, and Hinami had actually converted all of them into super popular characters.
Yeah, that was brought up because I was like, I think that the message they're trying to go for is like that aspect of change, because Yuzu like hit it really hard early on, was like, you know, this person's trying to change, Nanami's trying to change, and I want to change, and yeah. Shuji wants to change. Don't be mean. Yeah, really good. Very much so a surprise of the season. I was, again, not really expecting to get much out of it, and I got a lot out of it, and I hope that we get more. But yeah, I have to say, and I'm going to be very as vague as possible, but there was this moment where he was told to do something later on, and I was like, if you do that, I am literally going to hate you.
I was convinced they were going to hurt one of my favorite characters, and I was like, you do that, I'm like, oh, never watching another one of these episodes.
And they subtly set it up early on, and I was like, I immediately thought of Chris when it happened. But you had that moment where there was essentially Fuka, and again, this is early on, so I don't think it's really that a spoiler. Fuka essentially thinks that Fumiya is reading, or Tamazaki is reading something. And again, it totally could have gone the route of him going, oh yeah, I did read that, and then he has to go rush and watch or read it or something like that. No, he literally comes out and says, oh, by the way, I'm sorry, I'd have to tell you, I didn't read it. And I'm like, oh, Chris, communication. look, Chris, it's communication. They're doing the communication to alleviate later drama. Wow. This writer
That's one of the things that made me really like Tomozaki. He was like, it was almost this thing that kept coming up of, you know, kind of deceive these characters. And he's like, I don't want to do that. That's like the opposite of everything that I am. And I was like, this is one of the things that really makes me like this character. And
well,
so
again,
I'm hoping
is really the big beat of the show that I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing, because early on, it really does kind of give this depiction that Tomozaki is going to be a wallow in his own self-pity kind of character, and he really doesn't. He really does kind of break out there and exude that idea that we're mentioning, which is change, hope, go out there and do it. Just he actively is seeking out, okay, let's give this an actual shot. So when he's giving, and it is technically to his character, that is what he is. When he technically is good at TacFam because he gave that, he's seen this as something he wanted to tackle and to master. And that's the same attitude he gives to the game of life. He'll say, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. And he actually pushes to master it. And that's a really good quality of him and makes him enjoyable. So yeah, bottom tier character, Tomozaki, another solid one of this season for sure. Geki Doll is our next one. This one is streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Hoods Entertainment. This is another original. The genres are music. I would also put in there psychological horror, idol drama. Yeah, all that stuff. Sci-fi. I don't have any genres listed in here, so I'm gonna have to make them up on the spot.
Pretty sure there was some Yuri in there somewhere.
Oh, Yuri all over the place. All over the place. This one exudes Yuri. But yeah, there you go. This one essentially takes place in Japan. It is following an incident, I think they said 5 years prior, where essentially an entire district of Japan disappeared off the map. They're not really sure what happened. It's just nothing but rubble after a flash of light. And we follow a girl named Seria, and Seria, unfortunately, is somebody who is a casualty to this whole incident because her sister and her father and mother were in the area when it happened, so she lost them. They don't know what happened to them. And it, again, is 5 years later. They're all getting together, or not getting together, but Seria is approached by a girl named Karu, and Karu essentially is managing a group of theatrical performers or stage performers that utilize this system that is known as the theatrical material system. And this system essentially creates almost an augmented reality. It changes what you see before you into different things. So they can have this system essentially change their outfits into something else, project almost a different environment that they're standing in. So you can essentially, even though you're watching a stage performance, the entire atmosphere and the environment changes to like a setting, like a desert island or something like that. And the characters' outfits themselves can change into, you know, dresses or whatever. So they can actually perform and do all the stage stuff with an actual environment and appearance. And there's only two of these systems in this world so far. The one that they're using at this Alice Inn, which is kind of in the, like at the off the side, small little theater. And then this one that is being used by essentially the premier place. This is this big corporation that has this theater, theatrical material system, and they are making bucos of money. They're very popular. Everybody goes to this huge stage, and there's this big performance. So essentially there's two of these. One's popular, one's basically unknown. But Seria gets recruited into this Alice Inn theater, and they start, you know, learning. She starts learning about the system. They starts to want to learn how to, you know, become a part of the actual acts themselves. And all the while, you're learning about the fact that, you know, these two companies are actually very well, very much so kind of intertwined. And this weird doll that is at the Alice Inn Theater that is creepy as hell. And, yeah. All that good stuff. And then again, you start getting into the characters themselves. Idy, who is was a past idol, was exploited when she was younger. Aimi and Akira, Akira, and their first time they met Karu, and yeah, Takezaki, the jerk that owns the other place. Yeah. So your thoughts on Geki Doll?
I never did catch up.
No, I really wanted your perspective on this one. That's fine. Maybe if you get caught up by next week, you can give your thoughts on it. But
you scared me away from it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's yeah, it's a hard sell. It's very much a hard sell. So this is a weird one because technically this show started out really good. Like, it really good. This show started out extremely good. Like, it essentially opens up, you know, you have this background noise of, you know, this happening of this district disappearing and the effects that it has on the people. They're all trying to basically find happiness. A lot of the emphasis on the stage acting and the theatrical material system is, you know, based around the idea of essentially giving people this distraction, giving this people this hope, this kind of glimmer away from war and happenings of the world. And it kind of goes to the wayside as you kind of focus more on Seria joining this theatrical group, getting to know the other members. And then it starts getting really kind of heavy slice of life, talking about Idy and her experiences being a exploited child idol, which I thought was really unsettling and kind of well told. I think Idy as a character is really fantastic just because it hits so much on the idea of the effects that this has on her. You kind of, like we mentioned earlier, it does have this sense of, you know, Yuri, and a lot of that is centered around Idy, and it really does kind of feel like it's because she is matured so much, unfortunately, due to the exploitation she faced. And then it gets really heavy psychological horror as you really start getting into, you know, the doll and what she's able to do. Essentially, it starts harping on this idea of controlled emotions. And when it starts getting into a lot of that stuff, the idea of controlling emotions, it gets very much so psychological horror and very kind of not violent or gory unsettling, but kind of eerie unsettling. Like, what is this okay kind of thing? And the effects that it has on different characters, especially Seria, was fantastic. I was absolutely eating this show up. I was in love. And then it kind of has this point in which it kind of, things settle a little bit. And that's when it goes in a direction I wasn't personally too happy with. It gets very, very sci-fi. And so it's kind of funny because the show has essentially like three different arcs to it that all have seemingly different genres that are really its emphasis. Very slice of life early on, very psychological horror in the middle, and then just bat crazy sci-fi in later parts. And that's what, yeah, essentially is, I know what scared Chris away was, I said one thing that the later part does, and that immediately was like, Chris is like, no. No. And well, I don't blame him because it was what ruined it for me.
I was already going into the psychological horror section, and so I was already like, I don't know that I really want to delve into Saria's crazies, because it's obvious that she's like way off the deep end. And introducing Doll into that. It was crazies.
Unstable.
I'm not blaming that, because I think that it was an intriguing direction to go for that. I really wasn't feeling going into that. And then, but yeah, what Andrew was pointing out as far as the last section, it was like, I've already gone into why I hate going into that stuff, which is, I don't care for stories that go and try and delve with that. And Andrew said it's not the type of version of it that really does bother me, but I was already, yes, I was intrigued by what they were going to go into with Saria, but at the same time, nah, it's okay. I already had enough with Code Black.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, like I said before, it was so good. Like it totally had me. This is a funny thing, because when I reviewed it on YouTube, when somebody was like, "Well, do you recommend watching this show up to that point and just stop watching?" And I'm like, I think you technically can. Like, I think you can technically utilize that as a complete story. But at the same time, you're going to have that backstory that is unfinished, basically. Like, there's that looming backstory that is never going to get kind of answered. But at the same time, that answer's not a good answer, so what does it matter? But no, it is... The other kind of... The frustrating thing is, and I often mention this as my issue that I have with a lot of storytellers. This happens way too much with RPGs especially. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I play an RPG and it gets to that later part where it's almost as if the writer has this, like, there's this thing in the background that says, to tell a story, part one, tell a story, part two, have a climax, part three, have an insanely crazy big bad at the end. And it was almost like they did that with this. And it gives me that desire whenever I watch something like this where I go, no, keep it simple. You don't have to have a big bad in every story. There's no reason to. It's not a necessity. And unfortunately, it is a common issue that I have with specifically Japanese storytellers, is they always have that need for some reason to have the big bad. And it's like you just want to yell at him, like, and shake him, like, no, you don't have to. You don't have to do that. Keep it simple. Keep it about these characters that is working so well. You're good at this. You're knocking it out of the park. You don't have to have a big bad. You don't have to. I think that was the issue that I had with Aiko Incarnation, where it's like it felt like they had to just shoe in a bad guy. Like, you don't have to. You just focus on these characters. You're doing so well. And yeah, again, it makes sense. The direction they go makes sense to the characters. The almost manipulation that is happening makes sense. It's just they made it too grandiose and they didn't need to do that. And that's what ruined the ending. So, that's my thoughts. I think it was absolutely stellar at the first half. I thought it could easily be a gem of the season with the show, but like I said, it fumbled the ending really bad. And this is kind of a prime example of that idea that, yes, technically an ending can ruin a show. And it's very unfortunate because of how well it was doing. Now, granted, there was other issues with it prior to it getting to that folly, which was mainly in the animation. I love the character designs. I think they're adorable. But and it is technically kind of a unique art style itself. But it had this weird issue where, and it almost felt like they changed directors or they outsourced some of the episodes. Because for some reason, out of nowhere, it felt like a lot of the animated angles were either like extremely close to the characters and it felt like they were hiding something, or it felt too close. Like, why are we suddenly in this angle with these characters? It just felt awkward how they were portraying certain scenes. And like I said, it felt very in contrast to the early parts and the later parts. So I almost felt like they changed directors or possible, you know, outsourced or something like that. So, yeah. If any of that sounds interesting, you definitely check it out. I thought it was a really interesting take on the idols things. I guess I really didn't mention the idea that the reason why it's Geki Doll, which is technically idol included in there, is that it's a combination of Engeki and idol, which Engeki is stage performances, basically theatrics, and idol is idols. At some point, they're trying to make money and get a little more popular, so they decide to do idol performances on stage. And I thought that was kind of interesting, weird take on it. I was a little disappointed in the fact that while we did get a lot of idol performances on stage, the theatrical stuff, which is technically unique for this particular group, and it was the thing that they were actually passionate about, we didn't really get many of the stage performances. And if we did, it was like two lines from each of the performances. And I felt that that was kind of a letdown, because you're selling us on stage performances and they're very excited about the stage performance they're going to do. They're like, oh yeah, that's a really cool script. And then we don't get to see any of it. It is kind of weird. But
the few times of the episodes that I had watched, it felt like they were shoehorning the kind of idol-esque part into it, and
it makes sense to the story.
First part, the actual performances, it seemed like they were doing the same thing over and over and over again. But I don't know if they changed that.
It's like the same two lines from the same performance over and over again. I'm like, man, I can't wait till I get the next line. Having watched the whole thing, I don't feel that the idol thing was shoehorned in. It was technically a part of the story and was something that they were doing reluctantly in order to succeed. And like I said, it was hitting on that. And I do like that. It's just unfortunate that by the fact that they did only showed really the performance of idols, it technically leads it to what you're saying, which is, oh, you're just selling CDs at this point. It is one of those aspects of where, even though we were downplaying a lot of people's thoughts on Grimgar being a advertisement for No Name, this almost felt like you kind of are trying to sell this, aren't you? And not showing us what they want to do, which is unfortunate. But yeah, that is Geki Doll. A lot of potential. Definitely started out really strong, but unfortunately did not, I wouldn't say land the ending, just kind of flubbed the ending altogether for me personally. So yep, that's that. Idolly Pride is our next one. We have Idolly Pride, which streamed on Funimation. This ran for 12 episodes, was done by Studio Lurch. It is another original series, and the genres are music and drama. And interesting people that were working on this is Tatsuya Takahashi, who did Idolmaster Cinderella Girls, along with Noriko Takayo for that show specifically, not this show. But yeah, this one, this essentially early on follows a guy named Kohei. And Kohei, when he was in school, was approached by a girl named Mana Nagase. And she's like, you know, can you come with me, help me? I'm going to go audition to become an idol, and I would really like you to come with me. Well, come to find out, she was dragging him along because she wanted him to be essentially her manager. And so he gets roped into being this Mana Nagase's manager as she becomes an idol. And the kind of the unique thing about this world specifically is that idols are not necessarily ranked and achieved based on popularity of people. You know, getting a following or anything like that is not really the case of how to be successful as an idol. They have this AI system that actually dictates the rankings of the girls themselves. So they go on a stage, they perform, and this AI system actually dictates who will win in these competitions of idols. And Mononagase is kind of a rarity, and it kind of never really happened before. She succeeded solo as an idol and climbed up the ranking systems very quickly. She captured the hearts of many people, all the way to the point that she was going to perform on the final stage itself. But unfortunately, an accident occurs and she passes away. And then jump forward in time where Kohei is still working in the industry. He is still working at the Hoshimi Productions. And now he's recruiting several girls to make a new group. And one of those is Kotono Nagase, who is Mana's sister. She seemingly early on is trying to essentially get on the stage that her sister failed to get onto because of the accident. And also the other focus is on Sakura, who is a girl that is kind of just passing by, but then she kind of has this random desire that she is going to go in there and just walk in the room at the audition and auditions as well. And the unique thing about Sakura is that she sings a song and she sounds like she basically sounds like Mana. And so she immediately gets pulled into it. And they start gathering a bunch of girls. All in all, about 10 different girls they pull into the group, and they all start trying to climb the ladder of idols and fight against this AI system and compete against the other girls that are being idols. And oh yeah, there's this other weird thing where Kohei still sees Mana. The ghost of Mana is present and making comments every now and then about what he's doing and pulling together the group and all that stuff. So, yeah, your thoughts on Idolly Pride?
Oh, this is a frustrating one, but no, I ended up falling behind on this one.
Bad, Chris. Bad.
Yeah, this one I was really enjoying, and I want to say 2 episodes after they split up and started going into their own teams, that's about where I kind of fell off.
Oh yeah, the part that made me really mad. They had one episode where it like left on a cliffhanger of like, oh yeah, by the way, I want you to leave the group. And I'm like, what? Which is like a true testament to like just your desire for these girls succeed and your love for them, to have this moment where you're literally are wanting to throw something because one of them could be possibly hurt.
But yeah, now I'm hoping you're going to tell me that this is going to go into another season so that I can finish catching up on it and get more.
Nah, this was self-encompassed. This is. I mean, they could do something else with it, but this was a full story. I don't really necessarily see this being. And it is one of those things where, yeah, technically it's an original. If it's super popular enough, they're going to do more. I mean, technically it is idols. They do technically have each of these seiyus are performing on the side. They're doing, you know, album sales and stuff. It's an easy idol shows is an easy way to make money, just because of the idea that you're essentially creating idols, even though it's just a show. So, yeah, Trinity Ale, I love their music. I actually listened to them in the car. Trinity Ale has some fantastic music that came out of this show. So let's start off with the animation and everything. I think it looked gorgeous. I did like the character designs. I thought that the studio did a fantastic job of keeping them on model. The characters look gorgeous. Love the artwork for the actual show itself. And I think that's an important thing to sell a show about idols, is to look good, have the characters look good, and they definitely pulled that off. I loved all the different seiyus. They did a fantastic job of voicing the characters. They all had kind of their own little goofy voice quirks, which definitely added flavor to them. Thankfully, since this is only a 12-episode running series, they did not try too hard to get into every single girl. You have 10 girls. You don't really want to get into the stories of every single one of them. But I think they did well enough to kind of give them, you know, they had this little moment where they all kind of got together and started talking about Mana Nagase. And you obviously see in this particular world, Mana has inspired and touched the hearts of a lot of people. And a lot of the focus of the show really does center around the idea of, you know, the inspiration that she caused people, how that affects what they do and the goals that they have. and possibly later on the show, and they technically do, I'm not saying possibly, get to that point where they really kind of go, you know, yeah, this is my inspiration, but what do I want to do? Like, is this what I want to do? And that is technically an important part of the story itself, is getting that feeling of, yes, I appreciate the inspiration that she did create, but is this my voice kind of thing? And I thought that was a cool kind of story twist to it, because a lot of this focus, like I said, is on Mana. Mana is affected a lot of people, including people that are outside of the actual group of, you know, Sunny Peace and Moon Tempest, which, like you mentioned, is the split that happens with the actual group of girls. But yeah, I thought that this show started out really strong. I did really like the backstory of Mana. I did love the emphasis of the inspiration of Mana and the effect that she had in the world. We were really curious early on how important Mana's ghost was going to be. And it does lead to some really powerful moments. Like, there was one performance that one of the characters has, and the moment that they showed Mana watching it, it was very emotional. Like, just the shot that she's watching was very emotional. Getting into Kohei and why he still works in the industry, even though he, you know, lost Mana and she was the reason why he was there, was good. But I think overall, unfortunately, outside of Mana and her effect on people, Sakura's desire to be her own, Kotono's desire to be her own, there wasn't too much, emotion in the show. I did love the performances, even though they used CGI. It looked good. The CGI did look good. It blended well with the art style. But I'm even though I was entertained throughout the entire series, I didn't feel enough from the characters. They just were there. They were performing. They were existing. They talked about Mana every now and then. But not really hitting extremely hard all the time, which isn't really necessary. So don't get me wrong, but I did feel, looking back on it, that I didn't get enough from the series, even though, like I said, the beats pace by pace were solid enough. So yeah, like I said, I love Sakura's story. A lot of her involvement was fantastic. Kotono's story, while kind of lacking early on, does get into some great moments later on. And overall, it looked really fantastic, and I did love watching their journey to becoming successful. So, yeah. I guess that's it. I think I'm missing something. I feel like I'm missing something. Yeah. Good times. It was funny, because one of the things I was looking for, I think I mentioned in our first impressions, is knowing that when it's an original, you obviously want to look into who's working on it. And the moment that I seen that Tatsuya Takahashi was working on it, I was excited, because I don't know if he was specifically directly involved with, but I love Cinderella Girls. Specifically, there was one really impactful moment of that series, which is where Uzuki kind of steps out on the stage and has a performance, and it hits so hard. And they technically had that moment in the series, and I did love it. So for those that did hear our first impressions is wondering if I found that moment, yeah, I technically did find that moment. And it was a lot to do with kind of finding that voice of your own. And they pulled that off pretty well. So really fantastic music, too. Like I said, really, really good music. A lot of it's stuff that I would love to listen to on the side. But yeah, some really cute moments in there as well. So yeah, that's Idol Alley Pride. If you're a fan of idols, definitely check it out. It is one of those ones that's technically kind of a hard sell for people that aren't into idol shows, because I don't think it really technically has enough of that external idol moments that I think people that aren't fans of idols would be looking for. So yep, that's Idol Alley Pride. Check it out if that sounds to you. Jujutsu Kaisen, I'm putting this together wrong. Jujutsu Kaisen, this one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 24 episodes. It is, of course, the anime of the year of 2020, even though it was not had much broadcast before it was selected. But That's fine. It was done by Studio MAPPA. The source is a manga. The genres are action, horror, demons, supernatural, school, and shonen. The director was Seong-Hoon Park, who did The God of High School. And series competition was done by Hiroshi Seko, who did Ajin, Seraph of the Inn, and Vinland Saga. And this one follows a guy named Yuji. And Yuji is kind of a... He's currently kind of taking care of his grandfather, who's in the hospital. And as his grandfather is in his deathbed, basically, he kind of points out to Yuji that, you know, look at me, I'm not really... There's nobody here for me. Like, his grandfather's alone. Even though Yuji is there, his grandfather's alone. And so he's kind of like, you know, don't make the same mistake as me. Help others. Basically, surround yourself with people. And at the same time this is kind of happening, they're currently looking for this finger of Sakuna, or Sakuna. And this Sakuna is basically like the king of curses. As you kind of find out in this world, every person kind of exudes negativity and malice. And this malice and negativity that pours from humans becomes cursed spirits. And these cursed spirits basically live on harming humans and causing chaos. And at some point, as he's kind of, you know, his friends have this finger of Sakuna, he is approached by a guy named Megami, who is this Jujutsu sorcerer. And these Jujutsu sorcerers are basically a group of people that will go out and destroy these cursed spirits that are harming people. And they use curses in order to fight them. And Megami approaches Yuji and is like, where's his finger at? It's missing. You obviously know where it's at. And he's like, oh yeah, my friends have it. And so he's like, okay, they're in danger. So they go back, and sure enough, they're being attacked by a cursed spirit that wants this finger, because all the cursed spirits want the fingers in order to make themselves stronger. And in order to save his friends, Yuji consumes this finger and thus brings into himself Sukuna's spirit himself. And where normally most people would probably be possessed by Sukuna and it would be really dangerous at that point, he's able to kind of regain control of himself, but yet still have the powers of Sukuna. And so it kind of just follows Yuji as he is learning about the cursed spirits, learning about cursed users, whether it be good or bad, joining the sorcerers to fight the cursed spirits, and basically the politics of the Jujutsu sorcerers as well, because obviously him having Sukuna within himself, the sorcerers would want to execute him immediately. But they decide, well, Gojo, who's like this really powerful one, decides to essentially give Yuji the option of, hey, either we're going to have to kill you now, or you can join us, help us find the other parts of Sukuna, and then we'll kill you once you collect all the parts. So die now or die later. And obviously, like I said, Yuji is like, you know, now wanting to go out and actively help people. He kind of goes along with it. So, yeah. This show is absolutely gorgeous. Like, I joked about it in my video review, but like, oh, so this show is the reason why MAPPA used all the CGI for the Titans in Attack on Titan, the final season. Because it's funny because it's not just the animation's amazing. There's so much of it. This show is just action-packed, full of action scenes. It is absolutely incredible how good this show looks and how many amazing action pieces it has. And it's surprising because, you know, in most cases with, you know, action shonen shows especially, it's a lot of like, you know, just punch, 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 really super fast action that you just really can't see what's happening. This is like very fluid animation, a lot of really cool like choreography between the action scenes, characters fighting each other, all that kind of stuff. So excellently done. Every action scene was so much fun to watch because it was so well put together. Especially like the later on part, specifically with this character named Hanami. Really amazing fight that was happening with all the characters it is so good. The action is so good. And it's really cool because each of the curse users themselves has like a unique way of using curses. And the way they utilize a lot of that stuff is very clever. Like how one character can have a curse and how it can accent the capabilities of another curse user was really cool. Like they had like one of the last fight scenes was absolutely incredible because they were utilizing this in such a clever way between the two characters. Really did like it. Chris will love this. I do have to point this out. Chris will love this. Hey, Chris, do you remember how most shows, well, pretty much every single shonen show, you have, like, in every fight, several times, you have somebody go, oh, they used that ability, and it does this. And they have to explain everything so that you know what's happening.
Yeah.
This show makes it a mechanic, or this story makes it a mechanic. In order to make a curse more powerful, so say you put a curse on somebody that harms them over time, say like a poison. If you explain to the person that you used it on what you're doing, it's almost, it makes it stronger. It's almost like you knowing what happened to your body, like, wheels it further into existence. So it makes sense. Like, they'll have this moment where somebody uses a curse, and then they'll explain it to the person, and then suddenly, like, yeah, now it's more powerful. Now it'll go faster, or something like that. And I thought, I got
almost,
it makes sense. And I got a huge kick out of it.
Almost a law of attraction type thing.
Right, right. Like I said, it's very much so in the idea of, like, you're making it seem more real. Like, you're willing, your knowledge of it is making it exist. So I thought that was really clever. And it, like I said, it's not cheesy. It didn't feel cheesy. It makes sense to the world. Like, this is the law of this world. And it's just funny that that is actually making that makes sense. So yeah, I loved all the characters too. And it's so funny because there's several characters that feel off-putting at first. Like, I was not liking Toto when he first shows up. This is this guy that's like super muscle bound. All he cares about is his idol, his pop idol that he loves. And like, every time he goes to fight somebody, he has to ask them, like, who is your ideal woman? And depending on your answer, I'll be your friend or basically destroy you. But him and Yuji were just so fantastic. Like, they were an absolute gem of this entire show. I loved them together. They were absolute goofballs together, and was a huge enjoyment. Like I said, a lot of the characters that I thought I wasn't going to like, or was off-putting, or they got into a backstory of, I was immediately kind of dismissive. But with every single one of them, I loved them. I absolutely loved all these characters. Yes, especially Gojo. Gojo is literally man crush levels. And it's so funny because it feels like MAPPA themselves loved Gojo. Because I had to send Chris a couple pictures. I'm actually seeing them on the screen right now because we're using Discord, and I sent it through Discord. They obviously love this character because every scene that he's in, he's gorgeous. Like, the level of detail and gorgeousness they gave this character is like, you guys love him, don't you? You love this guy. And it's great because he's like, him along with like Sakuna are like incredibly powerful, and they exude power. But at the same time, where Sakuna is more like super serious, I'll kill you, Gojo is more a goofball, essentially. Like,
I'm so overpowered, I don't have to take you serious in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Like,
the few times I've seen him fight, it was like, yeah, I could see that.
Like, even the whole concept of why Yuji is still alive is because Gojo basically said, no, I'm taking him under my wing, and you're not really going to do anything about it, because he knows he's more powerful than anybody else in the Sorcerer's group. Even though he's not the leader of them, he knows that he can easily overthrow them. Like, that is a pretty solid thing they pointed out really early on, is that he wants to shake things up, and he knows nobody can take him. So he's absolutely incredible. And the fight scenes that he were in, which are very, very short because he's so freaking OP. And it's so funny because that was the same feel that I got from, like, Naruto. That was one thing I loved about Naruto, is you had, like, yeah, you had the main character, but he was a goofy kid. You'd seen the power in the adults. And this is one of the great things about this, is having that sense of Yuji, yeah, is really powerful, but Gojo's OP as hell. Like, Gojo comes in the scene and he just like is like, no, Sakuna, you're not gonna do anything bad. So yeah. Really, I love all the characters. I thought they were fantastic. Even Touge, which I think you didn't like him either.
I was going to bring that up, of something that you had mentioned about the The fact of certain things that were kind of annoying about the character kind of ended up being their thing. And I was like, when you had, because I, Toge, when I first seen him, he annoyed the crap out of me because he kept throwing in random, was it fish words or just food in general?
Yeah, it was mainly fish. Like, he would just suddenly out of nowhere say salmon. And it's like, and that's all he said. He would not communicate to people. And I was telling Chris, it's like, can you imagine this stupid quirk that he has that I thought was just a quirk and it added nothing to the scene, was actually for a reason. Like, he literally is saying these words because he's avoiding saying actual words because his power, his cursed power, is through his words. And in order to avoid possibly harming those around him, he does that in order to avoid it. In the moment he, like, unzips his mask around his mouth and says one of these curses, it's like, holy crap, this dude is massively OP. And now you know why he doesn't talk to people normally, because he literally could kill people. He is that insane.
And it was like, yeah, makes perfect sense to me. I don't doubt it at all that was what was the reason why he wouldn't talk. It was because that's the world that they were in, and it was like, it fit perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, you got a panda as one of the
Panda best, was one cool, of the guys too. Panda was so cool. Momo was Rhea Kajimia. I have to point that out. I instantly fell in love with Momo. I, even though she didn't really have much screen time either, I was like, oh, Rhea Kajimia, I love you. I love this character already.
Yeah, Momo absolutely caught my eye going through this list.
Yeah, Maki had a great story arc to her. She's definitely an incredible character. Kasumi is so great. Kasumi is like the inner dialogue character where, like, whenever she's on the scene, you're just kind of getting her inner dialogue about what's going on and what she's going through. And she's literally like the office worker of the team. Like, you have all this fighting happening and then suddenly it cuts to her and you have like this inner dialogue about, like, yeah, this is kind of, this is going on or whatever, or this happened. Or she's geeking out about Gojo because she's like madly in love with Gojo. Her like inner dialogue is incredible. She was an absolute joy. She's incredible too. She's got like the whole kind of quick blade style. Yeah, love all these characters. I can keep going on. It does have a very much so a dark tinge to it, of course, because obviously these cursed spirits are harming people. They do get into the idea of somebody being a human that uses cursed arts or being consumed by the cursed art or cursed spirits. That kind of stuff, murder versus, you know, the difference between killing a cursed spirit and killing a cursed user. So it does kind of get heavy on a lot of things. A lot of grim things happen to humans that they're obviously, you know, being harmed by these cursed spirits. So keep that stuff in mind. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with this show. Like, it is actually a really fun show. The comedy's really solid. Yuji's a very likable main character. He just wants to help people, and he's also a goofball. Megumi's a great character as well. I thought that he was going to be like a stereotype or an arc, you know, a usual rival character, but he was actually really cool as well. Nobara was a lot of fun as well. It has all the makings to be a really solid shonen show. And I don't know if they're going to, I know they're doing a movie and I'm hoping they'll continue on from there, but this has all the makings to be like right up there with, you know, Demon Slayer and My Hero Academia. Is these kind of this new wave of shonen shows that are kind of pushing the idea of having incredible storytelling, incredible characters, but being adapted incredibly with an amazing animation and great production value that just accents everything else. It looked great. It had great feel to it, comedy, everything was spot on, and I just cannot wait for more. So, yeah, and after I watched this, I ended up making a video, like, is this the end of shonens that we know it? Because I like this new trend of these shows that are hopefully going to be long-running that these studios put a lot of effort and budget into and hopefully don't kill themselves over animating things, so... Chris is definitely going to, especially if this gets another season, Chris really does need to get caught up on it. because this will be one that you cannot.
It's a shonen.
Yeah.
Shonens are something that I always end up going back to, especially I like Black Clover. I plan on getting back to that at some point.
Yeah, if I...
Even with our...
If I had to give it any negative, well, technically getting into the aspect that Gojo is kind of working behind the scenes, and there's some aspects of the Jujutsu Sorcerers kind of... the ranking systems and how everybody's kind of controlled. There's like this element of, like I said, Gojo trying to shake the foundations of what's happening there. Having Sukuna kind of be in the background as possibly taking over Yuji. A lot of that stuff just... That's my only negative I would give it is if you're looking for that kind of stuff, it's not really there. Because and I think it's not that they don't have it available. It's just that there was so much focus put on the characters, especially with this first 24 episodes, that a lot of that got kind of pushed to the background. It was still there, and it was still kind of slowly being unraveled. I just think that the writer was more focused on really getting you attached to the characters and really, you know, getting into the personality of the characters and what they're about. So, like I said, it's not really necessarily a negative because there was so much focus on the characters and the action and the actual entertainment that a lot of that stuff got really kind of pushed to the background. So I would keep that in mind. But there was always that looming element in the background of the cursed spirit and the cursed users, the bad ones. That was a lot of the emphasis for this particular story arc.
Let me ask you this, okay? Does it feel like it has the staying power to be a full-on shonen? Because the way you describe it doesn't... I mean, I see the factions. I see the huge list of characters. Like, it should be a shonen. But you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, setting up Bleach, you automatically could feel, especially once they got into the other side, you automatically start feeling, okay, yeah, this is full on shonen. Naruto, after a certain point, you go, okay, obviously this is a shonen because they're introducing all the elements of being a shonen. This one doesn't seem so much like it's setting up like that.
I think equally as much as this as any other one. I mean, like with Naruto, what does Naruto open up as? Naruto has a super evil beast thing within him that can possibly destroy everything. What does this one open up with? Yuji consumes Sakuna, and now that he has this inside of him, this thing that can destroy everything. And then slowly unravel other things. You have the society is kind of revealed, both with Naruto and with this one. But not like anything that is, oh, here's this one thing that could go on for on and on. Technically, the hook within this one is he has to consume all of Sukuna's parts. That is that's the carrot on the stick.
Yeah, I can see that.
Episode 200, he will probably consume the last piece of Sakuna. That is the ongoing thing. It was the same with a lot of other ones. But no, I don't. I think a lot of the emphasis on this is let's take down curse users. It's obviously showing that the curse users are evolving the concept of using the curses. And that is the thing that's going to probably evolve over time is how can they use this differently going forward and how that will affect humankind. But the carrot on the stick obviously is Sukuna. My whole point is that that overall story doesn't have a hook yet. But if you think about it, technically, a lot of the long-running shonens don't really necessarily have that hook within the first 24 episodes. Like, with Naruto, a lot of that emphasis was, you know, that stupid snake guy and a lot of that stuff, the ninja wars, all that stuff was the later part that was like, okay, things are getting huge. With Bleach was necessarily wasn't until you got into the Soul Society and started the battles within the Soul Society, the double crossing that was happening between the captains. That was the bigger part that was the arcs. This one I don't think necessarily is there yet.
And that's what I was hinting at was getting to that, like for Naruto, it was the getting into the school battles where they were taking the schools from each of the hidden villages and putting them all together and doing the exam.
This technically did that. This did the tournament arc, but it wasn't necessarily a tournament arc, which is great for me.
Or Soul Society, like Andrew was mentioning, or the even Black Clover does the same thing in the few episodes that I've seen. You get to a point in each shonen where you go, yeah, this is going to be a lot huger than they implemented at the very beginning. And that's kind of what I was hinting at, was, do you see that point yet? So, I mean, does it feel like it's going to be a full-on shonen where you get that feeling fairly quickly in each one of these other shonens that we're mentioning? Demon Slayer, which happened a few seasons ago, they introduced we've already gotten to that point where we were like, yeah, this is going to be huge.
I guess I don't really necessarily see it the same way. I think all of them have that feeling early on of like, okay, this is a big world with a lot of characters. And that's always a good way of opening up. I think the nice thing about this one specifically, and I think Naruto did the same thing, is a lot of its focus early on is, let's introduce a lot of characters and let's do it smart. Let's let you learn about these characters and let them not be just a sum of their archetype, so to speak, their personality. And that's what this one really did feel like it did early on, is really, let's get to know all these characters and let's get to know them really well. And they told it in a way that was involved with a lot of chaos and a lot of action and a lot of danger. And I think that's important as well, not having it feel like, oh, they're just stuck in a schoolroom. Let's get to know them in a schoolroom or something like that. It was, let's get to know them in the battlefield. And I do like that. I think that was a lot more entertaining way of doing it. I think the thing that really does sell me on a shonen, especially anymore, is having that feeling like I feel like the characters are evolving. I feel like the mechanics of the world are evolving, and it's going to constantly change in a way that doesn't feel forced, but in a way that makes sense. And I think that's what they were doing. And I think that's the evolution of the cursed spirit. It's the idea of the cursed users themselves, the danger they're facing, constantly being there. That feeling of, yeah, you're not as big as you think you are. And I think, again, that's something that was really well done with Bleach. Having that first time that Ichigo has his face rubbed in the ground by a captain was huge. And I think it had that feeling with this one as well, having their faces rubbed in the ground and then having them have to get saved by somebody that's much more stronger than them to show them that this is where you can be and this is where you're currently at. And having that carrot on a stick, like I said, is a huge important thing with this. Again, having great characters is a huge part of it, and having that feeling like it's going to evolve going forward, and I'm constantly going to be surprised by the mechanics, the curse using, the different abilities each have, is going to be huge going forward. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't necessarily think that a lot of the shonens had that huge carrot on the stick later on. It technically is there, though. That looming threat is technically there. And that's Sukuna, who is incredibly awesome. They have this one moment where this one curse user, he likes to affect people and by touching them. And at some point, he touches Yuzi, and it snaps into inside Yuji, and the guy is able to see Sukuna. And Sakuna's like, you touch him again, I'm going to kill you. Like, Sakuna's like, no, this is my territory, basically, and you're getting into it, and I'm not going to have that. And so you had this moment of, like, again, he is the king of curses. And he exuded that king. Like, he's up on this, he's inside of Yuji, he's up on this throne, basically. And he has this, like, this very looking down upon you kind of look. And he's so kind of intimidating. It was so fantastic to have this guy, like, literally terrified, like, oh, crap, what the hell did I just do? It was, yeah, really cool. And they also have, like, this kind of territory thing, which was interesting, which I think, again, they'll kind of evolve and get into later, but this aspect that curse users can kind of create like a absolute territory that anybody that, not that kind of absolute territory, that anybody within it almost like it affects the laws of everything to favor them. And again, I'm really curious of how they can possibly use that going forward, because it yeah, kind of feels like one of those broken things, but they never make it feel broken.
That one was a fascinating thing in the section that I had seen, which I think that was one of the first times that you actually see Gojo's true power. Mm-hmm. Well, not even his one true power, because it was in the first few episodes, and of course it was just showing off at that point. But it implies that Gojo is way freaking overpowered, and that he could just go into a curse user's own personal world and just destroy them.
Yeah, that, I mean, it that was basically a flex. If you basically establish that this is where you're going to lose, like, it does have that feeling like this is where you lose. That's what those absolute territories kind of feel like. I don't know the actual term, I'm forgetting, but that's the feeling that it gives you, is you get in here, you're dead. And yeah, technically that is a flex. So, yeah. Jujutsu Kaisen, definitely a phenomenal series, and I am definitely looking forward to future series of it. So, yep, let's move on to some fluffy fun stuff. We have Nanon Biori Nonstop. This is technically the third season of Nanon Biori. This is streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes. The studio is Silver Link, the source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life comedy and seinen. And for those that are not feeling familiar with the series, this basically follows a bunch of girls who are in a out in the sticks location in Japan, like out like in the rural area. Like, there's nothing but crops and everything surrounding these girls. And it's basically their daily lives as they basically find fun in the mundane, finding fun in just random things that they can possibly find fun. And yeah, another really fantastic series that is, again, going in third season. And I think it is definitely keeping up the momentum. So what's your thoughts on the third season of Nanon Biori?
Everything. I love this show, and having a third season was absolutely just cheese on the cake. I love it so much.
What? Like cream cheese or like regular?
Yeah, like cream cheese. Cream cheese icing. You know, it's great. Everything's okay. Great.
Cheddar or something.
This is perfect. You have down here pros and cons. For some odd reason, they're empty. Pros is everything.
Every single one of them is empty.
Nothing. Cons is nothing. In the pros, we add Tama. That is just makes it even better. So, I mean, how can you not have anything that is wrong with this show? It's perfect in every way, shape, or form. I love this show.
That's it?
I lost Andy.
I just thought you were going to say more than just that, okay? you catch me off guard when you're short.
There's nothing... I can't think of anything negative to say on this, and I don't want to ruin any jokes, because I love the jokes. Like we had mentioned in I think, the first impressions, when the setting up a joke at the very beginning of the show, or the episode, and basically making the punchline of the joke at the end, and it's this entire progression of the entire episode just leads into that final part. It does a lot of this stuff, and then there's the heartwarming, touching moments of some of the latter episodes, of one part where we were taking a character who was very, very shy and helping them interact with other people. Introducing Tama, which is going to be a new little sister for Renge. So, and then that entire thing going into some of the backstories behind Candy Store and why she has this kind of special connection with Renge. And so there's just so much, and just having this extra backstories and new jokes and all that stuff. I love it. It's perfect.
Better. I have to drag stuff out of Chris every now and then. No, that's basically where I kind of stand with it. It is odd to me after three seasons. I mean, I didn't really think they were going to pull it off with the second season with the manga itself as well, but I didn't think they were going to pull it off of the second season, and I really didn't think they were going to pull it off of the third season, but the writer continues to somehow manage to make such an enjoyable cast of characters, such a great comedy that they kind of put the entire thing. I mean, it's not like crazy loud and slapstick comedy. It's just very kind of happenstance comedy. It is, again, the fun and the goofiness of their imagination and making fun of mundane stuff. This is a very boring area of Japan. I mean, out in the sticks is a very boring place for anywhere, but being able to take that setting and make it just very enjoyable. is like partly to do with the great writing and the comedy, how, again, very not forced it feels, very kind of happenstance comedy, very in their mind kind of comedy. At the same time, having, yeah, like you said earlier, these very kind of subtle, not really heavy drama beats. I really, really did love the fact that Renge's friend came back to the town, which we know we unfortunately had our hearts broken watching Renge cry because obviously her friend left without her being able to say goodbye. Having that friend come back and how excited Renge was over it. Having Renge, again, being the youngest in the town, finally having a younger person in the area that she can now become the big sister, and how she tries very hard to fill that role. Like, my favorite part of this season, besides seeing more of Kaede, like the original kind of story of Kaede Candy Store, first connecting to Renge when she was still a very young infant, was absolutely adorable. But having this moment where Renge is essentially trying to answer the questions of her new little sister, the new youngest of the bunch, trying to be that smart, bigger sister and answering the questions that she already has was absolutely precious, because every time that Shiori would ask a question, Renge's like, oh yeah, I know that. I read about that right here. This is why this works this way. And then Shiori would ask a follow-up question that was always more complicated, and then Renge's always like, let's change the subject. I thought that I understood that, but apparently not. It was like this like advancement of questions that, of course, a young child is always going to have, like, this barrage of questions for you. And to have Renge, like, be like, yeah, I'm the big sister, I can answer these questions now. And then, like, completely get overwhelmed was absolutely a treasure. Hotaru, and kind of seeing her goofy side where she's more kind of childlike with her parents, and then having somebody catch her in that was hilarious. Suguru finally graduated, so he got to play his own graduation music, which is kind of awkward. But Suguru is, like, fantastic. They had, like, this moment where they're all thanking Suguru for everything he does, and it's like, what does he do? He always does crazy stuff in the background, but I didn't know that they actually noticed it. Like, find the sugar. Yeah, just so many good moments. And like I said, it's just, I think it's like, yeah, the amazing writing of the mangaka, the characters that the mangaka created, these goofy moments that they put them together for, but also in lieu of the adaptation itself, just the music's always on point. The music always fits the scene. The background art, the artistry, the everything the animators do to bring these characters to life, character designs, the seiyus behind them, everything is so perfect. I think there's something to be said about the seiyus themselves basically making these very believable, goofy children that are just being dorks. and it's so funny because I almost wanted to point out, and I know Chris is going to hate me for this, I almost felt like Tama was felt out of place. Tama's the seiyu behind, we always call her Tama because we know her from We Cross as Tama. Her seiyu almost felt out of place because Renge is such a perfectly voiced character, because they pull off her dialect so well and her kind of slurring her words. To have a younger character who sounds more well-spoken feels a little off place. It makes sense, though, technically, because Shiori's not from this area. They moved there. So she technically does talk differently. But I almost felt like she was out of place just because of how well they pull off Renge and her slurring words and everything. So, yeah.
Well, they're going to end up...
I love it.
They're going to end up in a kind of a catch-22, because effectively Renge is going to have to almost mature out of her... speech impediments or whatever you want to call it. And Shiori, basically that's what ended up happening, is they added a new character with speech impediments, and now Renge is going to have to kind of grow out of that, and effectively Tama's taking over that spot. And so it'll be interesting to see if they continue down the road and continue the story on, how they deal with that. But yeah, I kind of like both of them having their little things each.
Yeah, this is kind of the unfortunate thing, is that you do kind of wonder how long the mangaka will go with this, and that definitely does affect how older the characters get. But you do unfortunately believe that eventually, unfortunately, the mangaka will probably find that point where they're like, eh, I can't go any further at this point, because this is what these characters are. This is their time frame of their life that works with the chemistry. And to go any further, you make them older, is going to eventually lose a lot of that flavor that people do love it for. So, yeah. Good stuff, though. Absolutely love it. I miss it already. This is technically, like, easily the sugar show of the season, which, having a lot of pretty dark shows, was a kind of a welcome thing. But yeah, not gonna be.
Yeah,
I definitely amazing.
I absolutely loved it, and I had to record a nyanpasu between Renge and Shiori, and I sent it to Andy. I love it. It's just too much. Hopefully, Andrew will take a clip of that and put it in here for y'all.
Nyanpasu, nyanpasu.
And it's great to have like this show that you could easily just pop on an episode, any episode, and it feels very much so, because it is technically very skit based, but like Chris mentioned, they do technically circle back on jokes within those skits, so it does work out for it. It does have a feeling of, you know, this is like a day or something, but it is one of those ones where you could just jump in anywhere and not have to worry too much about the story. So it's nice in that regard, and it does work for it. And it is one of those ones where, if you are feeling down, it's always fun to kind of throw on an episode and just watch these kids have fun. Watch them learn things. Watch them be goofy. Watch them run off with their imagination. That is what it's sold on. And thankfully, I still have the movie to digest whenever I do need a fix. I haven't seen the movie yet. So, yeah. Good stuff. Really incredible. Love it. Miss it. All the good stuff. So, yeah. Not on Biori. Nonstop. Heaven's Design Team is our next one. This is, like, I guess technically our last show that is new. The rest of them are going to be returning shows. But yeah, Heaven's Design Team, or Tenshi Sozo Design Boo. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Asahi Productions. Sources of manga, genres are slice of life, comedy, fantasy, seinen. And the director was Suichi Masui, who did Chaika, The Coffin Princess, and Sakura Quest. This essentially is, it kind of takes place at the point in which God has created the heavens and the earth, and he is currently trying to fill the world with the creatures of the earth, and they kind of joke about the idea that this is the point in which he's decided to start outsourcing. And so his outsourcing is to a group of people who are all essentially designing, or different people, they're technically angels. And so they design different concepts of animals that could possibly be put on Earth, and at some point, if God decides that he likes the design, he will communicate to this guy named Shimada, who starts working with this particular branch. He communicates to him to tell him, you know, it's approved or rejected, and then he tells them. So he's kind of like the voice, the translator, so to speak, of what he wants. So yeah. Thus begins the adventures of creating creatures of the earth and things that didn't turn out quite right. So, your thoughts on Heaven's Design Team?
No, they're not actually angels. Only Shimoda and Ueda are angels.
Yeah, I thought so.
I'm thinking that they're demigods. I don't know. They never really go into them, but they do have the names.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. Venus. Yeah, that was a weird thing, because they had translated names, so the characters, the names they were given, I didn't actually look into what they were, because I didn't actually finish the show, but they were being called something, and then the translation was Venus, Jupiter, Pluto, so I'm not sure if those are the Japanese names they were given, and that's the translation or not.
It seems like I was hearing that, but I don't know, I'll have to go back and check that anyway. I thought they were calling them by their names, but that you might be right.
Some of them sounded like it, but a lot of them weren't.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Some of them it sounds like it, and some of them it's just off a little bit, and so you're not really sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's probably like, this is the Japanese name for Venus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At any rate, I think that was kind of one of the coolest aspects to giving them a backstory-ish, so that you can kind of tie it in. Because one of the funny things is that a lot of these the fun thing about this is that to toy with the myths and legends. So like I was saying, having the idea of this being Venus and Jupiter and Pluto and Mars kind of incorporates the myths and lores of these extra people in history that, yes, they're there in our history, but they're technically quote unquote myths and legends. Or you'll have one of the projects like I think that Saturn is actually supposed to be Neptune, but Saturn might be the Roman version of Neptune for all I know. I don't know. I'm not going to go and look it up during the middle of a podcast. So that might be it. I do know that Neptune was the one that did a lot of the horses, and Saturn has an obsession with horses. And each one of them has their own thing. Venus likes to do birds and Jupiter is obsessed with making things that taste good. Pluto does she's kind of this, for lack of a better term, ugly cute type character. So she's a lolly that's obsessed with cute, but her version of cute is ugly cute. And so it kind of works for what they're doing in here. Mercury, if I remember right, he just liked to do cool stuff, if I remember right. And then there's one more that you don't have in this list, and he does the actual cute stuff. So when I say cute stuff, he'll do like teddy bears or bears. He does otters, just kind of the things that are fluffy, cute type stuff. And so each one of them has their own thing that they're good at making. And like I said, Neptune has an obsession with horses, and that's how they end up kind of twisting things. Is each one of them will do this thing, and they're trying to make it right. Mars in particular is kind of like the technical person, so when they do something, they have to do a prototype, and Mars makes that prototype happen. And the funny thing is this is how you end up with some of the, like I said, myths and lores. So they actually go into a big old long breakdown of doing dragons and why they can't actually do dragons. And the joke was, well, he's too heavy. So they make it into kind of a balloon type thing. And the balloon is filled with flatulence, and so that's how he floats, because he's full of gas. And why are they holding balls? And that's because that's his kidneys and all this stupid stuff. And it works in its own way, and it is kind of goofy and fun. And I mean, it's nothing super fantastic. I wish it was a little bit more, if they could do a bit more of the kind of, the entire thing is all about the extra stuff that they come up with while they're making the real stuff. Big old long going into, it took, and this is one of the fun things that I absolutely enjoyed about watching this show, is trying to guess what it is before they actually reveal what it is. Because they'll talk about sonic hearing or something like that, and then they want it to fly. So how do they make it fly without using actual feathers? And then they go into this big old long thing about webbing, feet webbing, and all that stuff. And you're, like I said, at the very beginning, you're going trying to guess if it's a bat or not. And so it's fun stuff like that that you end up getting to do with all this and go through the process with them. It is really fun in some ways. Really fun tidbit, at some point they actually do make things for Satan during the process, and that was kind of fun to do a lot of that stuff at the same time.
Yeah, so to clarify for people, like, for example, Venus, again, they weren't calling her Venus, so, or him, whatever you want to say, they were calling him Kanamori. Kanamori is the actual name for that character. For some reason, Crunchyroll translated it as Venus. And again, that could be a thing that the original creators told him to do that. We don't know. Whereas that Kanamori basically means forest or money metal. It's got these different words. So money metal and protect, or money metal and forest. And then you have a character like Pluto, again, was translated as Pluto on the stream. Pluto is actually named Mido. And Mido is dark land or underworld. So why they chose to translate Mido or underworld to Pluto, that's what I don't understand.
Pluto is technically the god of the underworld.
Oh, there you go.
If I remember right.
Well, that one makes sense then. Is Venus the god of forests?
No, Venus is actually the sacred feminine, for a lack of a better term. The yeah. god of love.
So some of it makes sense, but some of it doesn't really make sense, I guess. Like Mars is Higuchi. So it just seems, I don't know. Like I said, it could very well be that the Japanese writers told them to translate their names this way because it would make more sense. Or I don't know, for some reason they wanted to make it into something with the English translations for it. I don't know. It just seems like a very, it is one of those things where that was one of those kind of off-putting and very kind of distracting things. When I'm hearing one name and I'm getting another name translated to me, it jars with me watching it, I guess. So Higuchi, which is the one that like does the test versions of them.
Yeah,
Higuchi apparently is Mouth of the Drain. Oh, weird.
Who?
Higuchi.
Which one was that?
The one that makes the test models. Mars. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I thought I was hearing their, and none of them are translating out that way.
Right. I don't think any of them are like direct words like that.
Huh.
Like I said, Higuchi, Maido, Kimura, Mizushima, Kanamori, Inabara, Ueda, Shimoda. Like, Shimoda is the only one that called him Shimoda. It's like, why? Oh, and Ueda. So the two angels technically were still direct names. For some reason, the rest of them, they decided to make them into, yeah, either planets or just gods or whatever. So very weird.
Yeah, Venus to me made sense because Venus was trying to be beautiful all the time, and Venus would make sense in that respect. Pluto being the kind of the underworld would make sense. Like I said, Saturn, I would have went with Neptune. That would make sense to me, but I guess in context, he didn't really do a lot of water stuff. I think Pluto did a lot of the water stuff. So six in one hand, half dozen in the other. The fact that if he was Neptune, being obsessed with horses would have made sense. Mercury and Jupiter, I never really quite got their joke per se. Because like I said, Jupiter was obsessed with making food, and Mercury would have been, if you go by Mercury is a communication type character. He wasn't really all that obsessed with communication. He was obsessed with things being cool, I guess. But yeah, either way, the translations weren't there. So this was, again, the translators adding something to it, I guess, to try and make it make sense. I could have just used their names.
Just could use their names. There's nothing wrong with Japanese names, but okay. All right, that's Heaven's Design Team. Check that out if that sounds interesting to you. It is one of those cases where it is technically a prime example of comedy subjective, and it just didn't work for me. That's all. So I had some few fun laughs in it in what I did watch, though. So, and a lot of it was in the absurdity with the absurd stuff they created. Not really necessarily like, yeah, I know that's how a giraffe works. I don't really necessarily need to get into them figuring out what will work for making a giraffe. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that was really where the strength of the humor was more in the extra stuff that they made. Like I said, having the myths and legends, I get one of their test grounds with the Galapagos Islands, where is well known that a lot of these weird creatures does exist, not necessarily the ones that they were making, but there's a lot of weird creatures there that don't exist anywhere else in the world. So yeah, it was kind of made perfect sense that the Galapagos Island was the test ground.
All right. Next one we have is ReZero, Starting Life in Another World, Season 2, Part 2, or ReZero Kara Hajimeru Isekai Seikatsu, Second Season, Part 2. It's streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio White Fox, sources and light novel, and the genres are drama, fantasy, psychological, and thriller. And for those that are not aware, ReZero basically follows a guy named Subaru. I don't know why it says Sabaru in my thing here. Subaru. Who was exiting a convenience store and suddenly, after blinking, found himself inside of a fantasy setting. And he's a total dork, and so he believes that he basically acknowledges the fact that, hey, great, I've been isekai'd. This is where I'm going to be a super powerful isekai character and take on the world and save all the damsels and be hugely popular. But no, reality really quickly sets in as he finds that he doesn't really have any special abilities that, you know, can help him become the super powerful, and he gets beat up by a bunch of thugs in a back alley and finds himself running into a girl named Amelia, who he immediately attaches to and tries to follow around, and eventually finds himself in a kind of shady location where he gets killed. And the interesting thing that happens with the particular story is that he doesn't just die in this world. It resets back to almost what seems like a checkpoint, and that becomes kind of his ability. His ability is that when he dies, he resets back to a set time, and he doesn't know when that time will be. It's kind of like I said before, it's kind of like checkpoints. He reaches a certain goal, and somehow that becomes the next point which he can reset to. But yeah, it's just kind of him trying to overcome certain things and mysteries of how he dies, or trying to help people while all the time getting brutally murdered and resetting back to a certain point and figuring out how he can avoid being brutally murdered again in the future. And kind of the overall storyline ends up kind of focusing a lot on Amelia, this girl that he does kind of find himself, drawn to. It is this girl that is, you know, a half-blood elf, which is frowned upon by the world and feared because in the past there was this great evil witch that everybody now fears, named Satala, and so, you know, most people would believe that she is kind of a reincarnation of her and thus fear her. And so a lot of his focus goes around the idea of helping her, and she is actually in a kind of this kind of competition to the throne. There was this kind of legacy left a long time ago that at some point the throne would have to be seated by a princess, and so there's a lot of these princesses that are all in line to become the one that takes over, and she is one of the kind of, I guess, what was the term? One of the candidates to becoming one of these princesses. So, yeah. It's kind of the thought so far. We won't get into too much details of what happened in part two, just to kind of avoid spoilers, but my thoughts personally are found all over the place in my videos, as I did an episode by episode impressions. And if Chris wants to talk about anything specific, we can do a spoiler discussion later on. So yeah,
this particular set of episodes was to me really, really fantastic. We had some downsides, removing of character, favorite characters. And at the same time, it allowed some of the other characters to actually breathe. And I think that that's the best way to put it without going too spoilery, on what ended up happening. When I say that, letting those other characters breathe means they actually started to come to the forefront and actually start to shine themselves. One of my favorite characters easily came out into the forefront. a couple of other characters that we were kind of iffy on. They were just there. They got to come out into the forefront and actually start to shine themselves. Even characters we weren't even expecting came out into the forefront and they got some time to shine. So it was really, really a fantastic season. We've got a lot of movement of characters and their motivations got to come out into the open so that we got to see some of the characters that we were like, what are you even here for? Those characters got to come out into the forefront and actually see backstories on them, who they are, what, why they're even a part of the story. So it was really fantastic. There was so much covered in this season. I loved it.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that I've always kind of really enjoyed about this writer is it is kind of technically the gimmick is the return by death aspect. The fact that when he dies, he can redo something over again. And it seems like it should be something that's really terrible in storytelling because who wants to read a story that repeats itself over and over again? But the writer always has a knack for seeing things at different angles every time he resets. And that ability to really kind of see all these characters in so many different angles is what really does shine with this particular writer. And it's something I've always loved, and it's something I continue to love with this particular series. Getting so much, and it was a lot of it was in the first part, so it's difficult for me not to recall things from the first part and apply it to this one. But overall, with this second season, a lot of the emphasis is on the actual witches and getting into them and possibly seeing other sides of them was absolutely fantastic. But in this particular part, mostly was obviously Amelia. Amelia was the shining beacon of this season. And it was an issue that I had with the first season. It was I didn't really get much from Amelia, and I didn't really care much for her as a character. Whereas, again, as Chris kind of mentions, taking one character out of the picture a little more and bringing her to the forefront, she shined so much. Getting into her backstory, getting into her... Technically, you couldn't get into her backstory because she couldn't see it. And being able to finally see it was absolutely just amazing. I loved it. Getting into Garf, which I didn't think I'd care much for, loved his character. Getting into Ryuzu and the history of Ryuzu, getting into Echidona and her history, getting into Rosewall and why Rosewall's doing what he's doing. So many good character points, so much character. This is similar to, like, Mushoku Tensei, is this idea of getting into so much in such a little bit of time was absolutely incredible. I loved every bit of it. Getting more into, like I said, Amelia and a possible connection that she has to certain people was fantastic. Beatrice, I think, was the only struggle that I had. And this, it has nothing to do with Beatrice. I love Beatrice's character. I love her to death. I think her being revisited so many times was my only issue that I technically had with this season. And it was just really in the idea that how many times we're going to see Subaru pulling her out of the library. Let's just kind of be done with this at this point. That was like technically the only kind of a little bit of struggle that I had. Everything else in this season was absolutely perfect. And I loved so many of the emotional points in the characters, so much development, so many cool action scenes. I think my only overall struggle with the series as a whole is, and I love a writer that's able to do this. He's fantastic at holding his cards, being able to have you kind of in suspense for what's around the corner, that intrigue of the world itself. But I'm starting to feel a little bit of world holding cards-esque fatigue. And I'm kind of wanting him to start kind of revealing some of those cards. And that's my only struggle that I have. And it's fine because we're getting so much character development. We're getting so much into these characters that it's not affecting the story as a whole. I just, at some point, especially after finishing the season, I'm going, we really haven't figured out much in the overall grand scheme of things, the overall world, the grander scheme of things. Those cards that he's holding so dear to himself, the witches that I think I figure out, but then suddenly out of nowhere Pandora shows up and I'm like, okay, never mind. I guess we're not doing the seven sins. We're doing more than that. A lot of that stuff is really still like, I'm kind of wanting you to start showing us stuff. I'm getting a little frustrated.
I was going to say about the same thing. I just worded it a little bit different. I felt like this particular arc, I hate to say it this way, it overstayed its welcome. It, especially that last reset. We had what? That was almost a 10-episode last reset. And it's, and when I say reset, for anybody who's watched it, you kind of know what I'm talking about. It, every time that Subaru has a reset, this last one, he didn't reset. It was his final go through. And me and Andrew were kind of joking at some point, I think.
So we believe. Let's put that at the end there, the caveat, or so we believe. There's nothing that says that it's been, he's at a checkpoint yet.
Right.
I mean, it would be really sucky, though, because that's a feeling. It's like you get so far into a reset, you're like, if he resets at this point, he's going to have to go a completely different direction at that point, because you've spent way too much time getting really into this point right here.
And that's what we were kind of implying when we were discussing it at some point, is that we were on a point that either he has to reset or this is the final time through. And literally it was the final time through. That one was just way too long. And that's what I mean is, this last particular arc, while it had a lot of quote-unquote reveals, like Andrew was saying, he's good at revealing stuff to make you feel like you're getting a lot, but at the same time, you realize when you stop and think about it, you didn't get a lot. You got a lot more questions than you got answers. And that's, in a way, that's a good thing, but in other ways, it's not. It's almost like cheap shots to me. I like it, and at the same time, I hate it, because I want more, especially with this particular story, I want more reveals soon, because I'm feeling almost frustrated that I'm not going to get a lot of reveals, and I need reveals at this point.
That's really my position. It's like, I love everything he's given me. There's not a single thing about this season that I did not love getting. I loved all of it. There was so much good content that I was eating it all up. And like I said before, the shining beacon for the last, technically this season as a whole, not just part two, but part one and two, was getting more into the witches. I am totally fascinated by that aspect of this world. But when I look back on it, I get a little bit frustrated, because I'm like, but I don't understand a lot of it because he's holding it too close. And when you create so many questions, eventually you get to the point where you're like, are you going to answer any of this? You've given me so many questions that I love, that I'm intrigued by, but eventually I'm going to lose track of them. I'm getting confused because we're not answering anything. And do you have answers? I'm starting to question, do you have answers for what you've questioned, is the big thing. So, yeah. Good stuff, though. I thought the whole... we somehow managed to make a character that we all despised into a character we love. How did you do that? I hate you. I feel bad now, because it's like, I hate this character so much, but now I know why he is the way he is, and now my heart's broken. Why would you do this to me? Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of did the opposite, where instead of turning a character that you really like into somebody you don't like, and going the opposite and making a character you don't like into somebody you like.
Right.
It's actually kind of fascinating thing to experience for once.
And I also do appreciate the writer's willingness to kind of have a character that they technically create to make you fall in love with. Like, yeah, technically, who did not fall in love with Akidona? She's just goof. I love her so much. She's so cute. But always having that thing in the back of your head where you're like, but she is still a witch, she is still greed, and she technically is in... she has her self-interest. She is greed. This isn't for her self-interest. And to have that willingness to kind of go, by the way, she's still technically, in a sense, a bad person. So you be careful what you're asking for. I did really like that. So, yeah.
I'm very curious, but this goes into what we were saying before, is like, how can we at this point judge any of the witches? Because we have seen technically all seven of them, and each one of them is vastly different on their personality scale. And yet you can see, as you look across all seven of them, you can see that there's multiple sides. Yeah, they're not inherently bad. There's multiple sides to each one of these things that obviously not everything is being revealed yet.
And again, that was kind of part of the whole part one discussion, is it's really cool the idea that you did technically introduce these things. It did bring up the question of, does the world really understand? They've obviously been told that this is a bad thing, that these are bad people. But then when you start learning about them, you do get that sense of, oh, wait, they're... I guess technically the way of putting it is that they are not inherently bad. They don't have ill intention. It's just that their power is destructive. And that, again, got me back to that whole theorization of, yeah, again, things not being quite what they seem in the world itself, that things were written a certain way. So, well, again, that's Beetlejuice, that intrigue. I want to know at this point.
Yeah, Beetlejuice is an excellent example of something that you are presented with may not necessarily be what you expect.
It's not the whole story. Yeah, it's not the whole story.
Yeah.
Which is great. I want to know it by now. it's just asking for... I know it's asking for too much too early. It's not as if this series has been going on that long. So, yeah. 50 episodes technically isn't that long of a story so far, so... that's ReZero, second season, part two. As always, I absolutely love it, and I definitely suggest it. It's just, unfortunately, not due to its own nature, has been dethroned in at least my second slot for my favorite isek of all time. Still a third. Third's still good. So, yeah. Attack on Titan. Let's move on. Attack on Titan, the final season. Not necessarily the final season. Yeah, this show. Yeah. It's funny because it was one of those things where you see Attack on Titan final season and you think, okay, cool, here's the final season and we're gonna wrap things up, and you get to the 16th episode and it's like, oh wait, no, never mind, we're not wrapping things up. It's not necessarily the final season. Final season part two is next winter, so yeah. It still continues to be a great series, though. I'm putting my jokes aside. Again, this ran for 16 episodes. It is technically, what, is this like the fourth season now? It is like, this is 70, the 75th episode was the last episode. So we're 75 episodes in at this point. But yeah, the only kind of question mark thing that came with this actual series was that MAPPA took over from WIT Studio. There was a lot of kind of hubbub about that because they didn't start off on the right foot. I think personally for me, I was a little bit frustrated by it as well. It technically... They were using CGI for pretty much most all of these scenes with the Titans, which does frustrate me. Now, granted, technically, WIT Studio started using CGI later on, especially with the Colossal Titan. I was a little more miffed than the idea that with this particular season with MAPPA, they were starting to use CGI for the characters themselves when they were zipping around. And that was not something I ever remember them doing with WIT Studio, and I was not happy about that. Not enough to go out and harass and threaten the creators, which some people did, which I do not condone. But they did quickly fix that, but they did kind of retain the CGI Colossal Titans, which does frustrate me a lot. And I think I mentioned before, it's like there's something to be said about that original appearance of the Colossal Titan. Remember how he was hand-drawn? He was massive. He was... very much so, like, he felt like a Colossal Titan. He was towering. He was huge. And he was amazing. And the moment they started using CGI, and WIT Studio did it too, the moment they started using CGI, he just looks like a toy in a playground. These wide-angle shots where these characters walking around, it didn't look scary anymore. It didn't look crazy huge anymore. And that's what that CGI ruined, that whole situation. So that aside, like I said, they fixed their issue with the characters themselves being CGI. I hate the fact that the Titans themselves were CGI, but it is what it is. This is definitely an interesting arc, and the idea that this is where they really start hitting heavily on the Marlians and the Eldians, and that sense of revenge begets revenge, especially is a heavy theme with this particular arc itself. Granted, we got into the Marleyans and the Eldians before, and the aspect of the kind of segregation and the racism that was happening. But this one's where you really start getting heavy on the effects of both the war, the desire for revenge, and the brainwashing and how that affects these characters. Yes, the elephant in the room, Gabby. I despise Gabby. I will always be team despise Gabby, and you cannot change my mind. I hate her as a character, and it's not really necessarily because of a certain reason that most people do despise Gabby. I think a lot of my dislike for Gabby is in the fact that she is a prime example of the effects of the brainwashing that this particular race goes through. But she never learns. That's the reason why she's annoying. She is the, I am caught up in this is my belief and I will not be wrong. And that makes her really, really annoying. On the other side, you have characters like Reiner, who is an example of that brainwashing affecting him on his perspective of the other side. He is... I want to claim that I think Reiner is probably one of the most incredible characters of the series as a whole, because he is such a complex and broken character. And you've seen it in his reveal to Armin at some point, I think in the second season. But his inner struggle at this point is so fascinating. And I think he's an incredible character because of it. But like I said, very, very much so a focus on the revenge, everybody having their own perspective on how to remedy the situation and how all those mindsets are really kind of clashing at this point. Obviously, they're taking Aaron in a very interesting direction. I won't get too spoilery on that stuff, but I have not read all of the manga. I am further than what the adaptation is, and I still at that point do not really have a full grasp of Aaron, what he's doing. So I will be interested to see where that goes going forward. Levi is as awesome as ever. Hanj was definitely an incredible character, this arc specifically. And yeah, technically it was something that was kind of building up in the previous arcs, but she's fantastic. What else? I do want to say that this was about the point in which I started getting a little bit frustrated with the mangaka when I was reading the manga as well. Well, this is the point in which it just starts getting really, really kind of more global scale with the storytelling. And I wasn't really necessarily into that when I read it. And I wasn't really too much interested in it with the adaptation as well. But as I usually say, I do like the fact that they are continuing to kind of cut a lot of the fat out of the storytelling and making it very kind of easy to digest the story as a whole. And so I will continue to praise the adaptation for that. I tell most people that I prefer the anime adaptation over the manga, and that's mainly because of that. It's a lot more easy to understand. I know that was one of the things that we kind of brought up with this particular arc, was that there was a lot of kind of time jumping happening at this particular point in the manga that was a little bit confusing for me. It might not be for everybody. It just was confusing for me when I read the manga, and I had no problem really kind of following the story with this adaptation. So I think that's a tribute to their ability to adapt it. It looks good. Great storytelling. Great story overall.
Well,
and I'm looking forward to the conclusion.
To be fair, I mean, the confusion is not unwarranted when you take into consideration that they had already done a very similar thing in the previous parts of the story, where it'd done almost a backstory-ish. And when you get into this part of the story, it's not unwarranted to automatically assume that's what they were doing, but it wasn't what they were doing, so it gets kind of confusing.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, love the series. Hate Gabby. And definitely suggest it as always. I still think that Attack on Titan's a really fantastic show, and I'm glad that they've been running this long and they are actually planning on fully adapting it. It's a great, great manga to adapt. And they're doing an incredible job of it, even though I don't like the CGI Titans. It was crazy because this is a frustrating thing. And I put a clip at the end of my review of it. So if you guys want to check that out, you can see what I'm talking about, too, because I have a visual. There's a scene where somebody's using this Jaw Titan to do something. And it was so unsettling. Like, yeah, you kind of got that portrayal in the manga, but this is one of those shining examples of how an adaptation can enhance something, giving it like intensity through movement, giving it intensity through sound, music, everything enhances the feel of a scene, whether it, you know, where in, again, in a manga, you're just getting a single frame. And this scene was done so well. It was so unsettling how they portrayed it. And I loved it to death. But there was still a side of me that was like, I can't get over the fact that this is CGI. There is still that I see a CGI character, and it ruins it a little bit. But it's like that thing of like, I love this is being adapted because it's enhancing it so much, but it's being brought down a little bit because it's not moving that much. Why do we have to use CGI? It is a very so much a tension moment where nothing really is moving. Why do you have to use CGI here? Because I can't unsee that. And it is like this inner struggle with me of like, this could have been perfect, but I can't get over the fact that this CGI is here. But it's still a good scene. It's so good. Such a good scene. So, did you get to that point? I don't know. I don't remember where you were at. Who you said you were at.
I haven't watched this season at all.
Okay. So not even that far in the manga either.
No, I'm somewhere in this arc, I'm sure.
Did you get to the point where they had the big attack on the town?
They were setting up for an attack, if I remember right. They were digging out trenches and stuff like that, and they were revealing that certain new people had the powers, and that's when I was going, I had the same situation as you where I was like, well, are we in the future or are we in the past or what the heck was going on? So yeah
struggle. So yeah,
so at this point I know you're way ahead of me, so
yeah, quite a bit. Well, technically 16 episodes ahead of you. Well, and the manga is further than that, so yeah, Attack on Titan, the final season, definitely a suggestion, the entire series as a whole, but yeah. The last one we have is The Promised Neverland second season, or Yokusoku no Neverland second season. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 11 episodes, done by Studio Cloverworks. The source is a manga, and the genres are sci-fi, mystery, horror, and shonen. Should I say its source is a manga? Because it technically went original. But yeah, I guess that's the elephant in the room we should tackle right off the bat. Yes, technically, after I think it was the fourth episode, they decided to go anime original with it. I think that I've seen some people say that they still covered some of the story beats. It's just, I think at this point, a lot of people are assuming that they just knew that they couldn't fit it in the second season, so they decided to original it so they can wrap it up quicker, which is fine for me because I have not read the manga, so I'm not seeing what is being skipped. I've mentioned in my talks about it before is I don't really necessarily as a the person that has not read the manga, I don't personally feel like I missed anything because I don't know what I missed. And I think a lot of people are frustrated because they know what they missed. And some people say that some of the best story arcs were skipped. So again, from a review and a perspective of somebody who has only watched the anime, I was disappointed. And my disappointment is more in the idea that I absolutely loved the first season. I thought it was a masterpiece. I loved everything about it. The sense of dread, the sense of suspense, the not knowing what's behind the curtain. All that feeling was great. The game of cat and mouse was absolutely phenomenal. For those that don't know what the story's about, it essentially is a bunch of kids that are at a orphanage. And every now and then, one of the kids will be told, hey, look, you've got a new owner, say goodbye to everybody, and they will take them to this gate, and they will go beyond this gate. But all the other kids have never seen outside of this gate. They're kept at this orphanage and never allowed to leave until they basically get adopted, which it's their day, and they get to leave. slight spoiler here. If you want to go into the series completely blind, I cannot talk any further without talking about slight spoilers. So I would suggest most people please go out and watch it right now. That not knowing anything beyond this point is a lot of the fun early on. It technically gets revealed to you within the first two episodes, so it's not. This is not heavy spoilers that I'm going to get into. So yeah, beyond that point, what you do find out is that they are basically being taken to demons who will then consume them. And that is the big plot twist right off the bat, is that they are basically farm-red cattle. And there's demons taken that are controlling the world itself, and they are raised in this orphanage made to be smarter, because they're essentially their smarts is what makes their blood and whatever consuming them taste better. So the smarter the child is, the more of a delicacy they are. And this particular farm itself is known for raising the best, because they have some genius kids there. Well, that's to their detriment in that fact these kids start working together to figure out how to escape. And so, like I said, a lot of that is cat and mouse game was that Mama Isabella and her basically stopping them and trying to figure out what they're doing and them trying to hide what they're doing to eventually escape was the fun of the first season. And I loved it to death. Second season lost a lot of that. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, well, technically at the end of the season, they, you know, reveal what's behind the curtain and they go behind the curtain and now they're throwing chairs everywhere and figuring out everything. So a lot of that sense of intrigue, a lot of the cat and mouse is gone. Yeah, they're still technically fleeing, but it lost a lot of that flavor. And that's what I was disappointed with the second season, is not that it went on the original, none of that other stuff. It was the fact that a lot of what I loved about the first season was no longer there. And granted, I think the second season was a fine season in the idea that it took the story and concluded it in a way that was satisfying. But it just didn't have that feel of suspense. It didn't have that feel of dread. It didn't have that feel of unknown that the first season had, even though they were technically revealing a lot of stuff, which I did like. My other big frustration that I had was that the ending kind of sucked. Not the ending of the story, just the way that they portrayed the ending, because you have this idea of this is the conclusion we're getting to, and you're like, oh, cool, that's amazing. I'd love to see, you know, what this person would say right here, because we've obviously been carroted this idea of this cool conclusion that we could get to, but when it gets there, they give you us a slideshow. So the ending, basically, where we would want to see what's said and we want to see how people respond, was just a slideshow and no dialogue, no conversation, no tidbits into what people are saying or responding. Just a slideshow. And I was very much so disappointed in that. I thought it was a huge lost opportunity and it left me kind of upset at the end. So yeah, a lot of cool moments, though. A lot of really emotional moments, a lot of really kind of unsettling moments that this series is good at doing. The writer is good at doing. It's just it left a lot to be desired, and it lost a lot of that really great impact from the first season. So there were a huge shift in tone. I will say, and this, again, is a little more slightly or more of a spoiler, but I don't think it's a huge detriment if you know it. And I'm going to be very vague about what I'm talking about, but I think people can probably deduce what I'm talking about. They did have a returning character, and this was a character that I thought was one of the best characters writing ever. They had that character come back into the story, and I already loved this character, and I thought this character was so well written in the first season. And I was afraid of it. I was afraid of them ruining the character. But the way what they had the character do, I thought fit the character. I felt it didn't contradict itself. And the ability for the writer to bring that character back into the fold and not ruin the character, I was super happy with. And I still stand to this day that I think it's one of the best written characters I've seen in anime ever. So yeah, super happy about that. But yeah. So yeah, not a terrible season, don't get me wrong. Just it wasn't a phenomenal series like the first season was, and that's not saying it's terrible, it's just saying it's just, yeah, it was good. Just not an amazing series like the first season was. So do I want to go read the manga at this point? No. I and I think that's the sad thing about watching this and not just jumping over the manga the moment that it went original, is I've lost my desire to really touch it anymore. But it is what it is. I'm done talking about it. Check it out if any of that sounds interesting to you. Like I said, hands down, no matter what, I still suggest watching the first season. I think it's phenomenal. I think the only frustration with recommending that is that people are probably going to want to check out the second season. So I guess my suggestion would be check out the first season if you love it as much as I did. You're at that point, probably go read the manga and just avoid the second season adaptation. So that is The Promised Neverland second season. My review. Check it out. Oh, yeah. And also the license holders suck because they gave us our first strike on our YouTube channel. But I'm not letting that affect my opinion of the show itself. My opinion is strictly on the story and the feel. And the feel was lost with the second season. So there you go. It's my thoughts. That's it. It's all the shows we're going through. It was a solid review episode, Chris, I think.
You think so?
Yeah. A lot of big titles there. I guess we can probably let you guys know what we'll be covering for the next episode so people are aware. But yeah, we have pretty much a huge packed episode next episode too, so definitely people can look forward to that. We have, if I can find it, we have That Time I Got Reincarnated as Slime second season, The Quintessential Quintuplet second season, Suppose a Kid from the Last Dungeon, Boonies Moved to a Starter Town, The Hidden Dungeon Where Only I Can Enter, Lock Horizon something something of the something round table or something, Yuru Camp season 2, Dr. Stone Stone Wars, Dr. Ramone, Azure Lane that short show, Horimiya, Show by Rock Stars, Pretty Derby second season ?
Show by Rock is possible. Pretty Derby is not as likely, because right now I'm going to finish up Log Horizon. That's a almost guarantee, unless I continue having the things that are causing me problems right now happen. Log Horizon is almost an assurity. Show by Rock, I'm very close to finishing, so it's very likely. And Pretty Derby is not as likely, because I have a lot of catching up to do that one.
Yeah, I would have too much on Pretty Derby, and I'm not sure that I would actually touch it at this point, even though I do kind of technically want to. I put question marks for the last two as well, Kimono Jaihin, which I have not even started because they didn't have it playing for me at all when we did the first impressions, so I'm like literally starting from scratch on that one. But I did want to get back to it. And the other one was Other Side Picnic, which I'm almost tempted that I would probably go watch Kimono Jaihin from the beginning rather than going back to Other Side Picnic, even though I am intrigued by it and I do want to see where it goes. So just keep in mind that you know, Pretty Derby 2 and Kimono Jaihin and Other Side Picnic are kind of question marks at this point. But the rest of the shows we will be covering at this point. So yeah, pretty much packed next episode as well, so definitely be looking forward to diving through all those. And like I said before, definitely people want other opinions, or sometimes I don't remember all I talk about when I do other reviews, and every time we talk about stuff we talk about it differently. So yeah, definitely check out our YouTube videos on a lot of these reviews, and hopefully we can get things done, wrapped up this next season, this next week, because obviously spring has already started and we need to start getting caught up on that.
So yeah.
And there's a lot of fun stuff coming up. So exciting. We thank you guys for listening. We hope you guys enjoyed our reviews for the winter 2021 season. And again, look forward to next week when we will be going into a lot more of them. But yeah, as usual, we're from otakuspirit.com. It's where you can go find all of our anime, new and old, great community forum links, the top social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff. And we thank you all for listening. We hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Os.